Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio. And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm podcasting from my house, 316 Gimmick Street today. We're doing some finishing touches on interior and exterior paint, and I've been trying to do the open to this podcast for about 15 minutes, but my goddamn dogs are making so much racket, especially Callie, that black lab. She's about 5 months old, and she whines and whimpers and yips and barks and just... She's the most vocal dog I've ever had in my entire life, trying to get Moolah's attention so they can play chase, pestering Hershey. Hershey's the alpha female over here for the dog pack. Hershey's regulating on her. She's pissing Hershey off. Hershey's 14 years old. If there's one thing that Hershey can't stand, it's from some upstart pup trying to make a mark on the pack. Hershey said that's her pack, and that's the bottom line because she said so. Anyway, I ain't got shit going on over here. I'll give you a couple stories here in a second. But hey, today's podcast, I got the white meat baby face from Norman, Oklahoma. My good friend, Jumpin' Jim Ross. Jim was in Los Angeles for New Japan Pro Wrestling live event in Long Beach. And he stopped by the crib to catch up. And we're just talking about life, the squared circle. And we're talking about the big Cass heel turn, Kenny Omega's future, Jim's return to WWE, and how he ended up calling The Undertaker's last match at WrestleMania. We talked about all kinds of things, and I don't mean to get too heavy on the Kenny Omega stuff, but all of my guests came by right when Kenny Omega was in town, so he kept coming up and we kept talking about him. Dude's a hell of a damn worker in the damn ring. We'll see what happens with him. Me and JR cover all that. We're just shooting the breeze. It's the first time I've seen Jim in a long time, and it was good to see him. Good to have him over here at 316 Gimmick Street. A real close friend of mine. He just looked to be doing really good after going through such a hard time a few months ago, and he seems to be in a real good place. And the podcast is just a conversation between two guys, and we didn't really have any agenda. We just started shooting the breeze, talking shit, and just having a conversation. Once we cut off the recorder, I got a chance to catch up with Jim on a personal level. And that's my conversation today. And I'm talking with Jim Ross, the first time I've seen him in a long time. And it's good to see him. And it looks like he's doing as well as he could be doing. And I enjoyed seeing him. Jim, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it. And it's always good to see you. Next time you're in Los Angeles doing something for anything, please stop by. Hell, before I get to Jim Ross, God damn it, I tell you what, them dogs tearing the shit out of me. Them some bitches, they're ruling the whole household. I got internet problems. My goddamn internet went out yesterday. I'm trying to send this show to Stacy. Can't log on to my transport system to send a file. The internet went out about a day ago. I went through the whole protocol. My wife went through the protocol of rebooting the system, turning it on, turning it off, restarting my computer. Something's missing. There's no communication somewhere or lack of communication between two points. So the goddamn guy from Spectrum or whatever the hell our internet service comes from is coming to the crib here at 4 p.m. And I can't wait for the sumbitch to get here so I can find out what the fuck's wrong with our goddamn internet. If there's one thing I can't stand, it's when my internet goes out and I can't send my show in. Can't hardly get on the computer to access any information. Right now, I got my trusty iPhone, which is crapping out on me right now. I'm fixing to go get a brand new one. I got my iPhone turned into a hotspot so I can log on to the internet through the hotspot to be able to get my reads, read my open stuff, and all that other bullshit. And my iPhone's crapping out. I'll be sitting there, and all of a sudden my iPhone will just turn itself off. I'll push all the buttons all over it, and it won't come back on. Finally, I'll do a hard reset on it, and this motherfucker will fire back up, and it'll go through the paces, and then it will come back on after it tells me to put in my security code. Boy, you got some nerve, iPhone, crapping out on me and then asking me to punch in my security code so I can get you to work when I didn't turn you off to begin with. And for it to just randomly start fucking up at this point in time, hell, I got that phone probably a year and a half ago max, maybe 2 years. And I keep a case around it at all times. Just bought a brand new case the other day just to protect this goddamn delicate piece of electronic machinery that I communicate with. Telephone calls, text messages, Twitter, Instagram, email, goddamn everything. When your goddamn phone craps out for you, you in harm's way. You can't do shit. This son of a bitch just sees fit to just shut down on me. The other day, I went down to the gimmick store and bought me a new hard case for it to protect it. A little bit of waterproofing, and it's a shock absorber. You know those kind of cases you get. The one I had was gray, and I had worn the fuck out of that thing, so I figured I better get a new one. And because I always seem to lose my smartphone, I figured I'd get a brightly colored one. Back in the day, I used to use that Blaze orange model, but they didn't have no more orange ones. So my wife was out shopping, and she picked me one up. She said it's red. I said, well, red's a pretty bright color. I'll take the red one. Sure enough, she brings it back, and I'll be goddamn, it's red, but it's pretty close to being pink. So you got the world's toughest SOB walking around with almost a pink case on his iPhone for protection. Now, I can see the son of a bitch from a mile away whenever I lose it or misplace it, but I wish it was a little bit more red-colored, and I wish it would have got me an orange one, but nonetheless, I got a new case because the other one was fucked up, and I didn't want any harm coming to my iPhone. Now, my iPhone's just crapping out on me, turning on and off, not dependable. You can't have that. You got to have a dependable system. I'm a global icon and a national treasure, goddammit. When I need to call somebody, I want to be able to call them. When I want to email somebody, I want to be able to email them. If I want to text somebody, tweet something, send an Instagram picture, I want to be able to do it. Goddammit, iPhone, don't crap out on me. I'll jump over to a Samsung if you make me, goddammit. The trouble, the bullshit, I should, you know what, I'm going to sell this motherfucker. No, I'm going to give it away. No, I'm going to throw it away. I'm just going to get me a goddamn flip phone. I think that's the easiest solution to this problem. Just get a flip phone, just talk to a motherfucker, and it's done. Anyway, hey, speaking of my Instagram account, the other day I was over at the grocery store, underground parking, and I got my Chevy truck, my 03 Z71 and my 95 Bronco out there blocking the street so nobody parks in front of my place. Well, my wife was in the SUV, so I got my little 2003 Ford Focus with 65,000 original miles, buckled my seatbelt, went down to the grocery store, and got some groceries. When I came out of the store, I was pushing my grocery cart, had 3 bags of healthy food as I'm on a fitness regimen, diet, eating program to get ready for Broken Skull Challenge, which will start in less than 2 weeks, getting ready for the heat out there. And I was coming up on my metallic P Ford Focus, and I said, God damn, look at that motherfucker. Driver's side window, still off the track, rolled all the way down. You leave this motherfucker in a parking lot, you ain't got to worry about locking it up, rolling the wind up, because ain't nobody going to break into it. It was dirty as fuck. It's been sitting out here in the weather for about 2 months. It needs to go to the car wash, but I can't take it to the car wash because the driver's side window will not roll up. I'm too stupid to fix it, and I ain't got time to take it to the shop, so the sumbitch is dirtier than shit. So anyway, I said, this would be a prime opportunity to take a picture of this exotic supercar and post it on my Instagram account, Steve Austin BSR. Shit, I took so many pictures of that metallic P motherfucker, people thought it was a goddamn supercar or something. People would come up to me and they said, what kind of car is that? Is that a new model? So there ain't no goddamn new model. It's a supercar. It's a motherfucking Ford Focus 2003 model. I said, by the way, it is for sale if you got $8,500 cash. Eh, I don't think I'm going to get $8,500 out of some bitch. But anyway, I digress. That little fucking Ford Focus. I went somewhere today. Oh, I had to go get my movie physical today, this morning. As I speak, it's Wednesday afternoon. You're going to download this on Thursday or Friday. Every year before you film something or before every project, you got to go and get a physical. They take your blood pressure. They don't really do anything else. They listen to your heart, your lungs, all that bullshit. You fill out some paperwork. They make sure, basically, that when you walk in, you ain't got rigor mortis or you ain't dying. And turns out, I passed the physical with flying colors. But I drove over there to get that physical. And the doctor's office had moved locations. I parked in a new spot. Hell, here on the streets of Los Angeles, California, you driving a badass, shiny, exotic supercar like the 203 Ford Focus, you think, goddamn, I should get me one of those, what do you call those little gimmicks you put on the steering wheel to keep people from driving your car off? Put a low jack on that motherfucker. Just get extra insurance. Ain't nobody going to fuck with a metallic P4 Focus. Hell, the other day I rode somewhere, and I was going to go do something. I stopped by my house, just left the car running out there by the driveway. Hell, one thing led to another. I left for some bitch idling on the streets of Los Angeles here in Marina Del Rey for about 15 or 20 minutes. Shit, if I'd have put a goddamn sign on there that said, steal me, taped a $100 bill to the steering wheel and had a full tank of gas, ain't nobody gonna steal that motherfucker. So I guess that little motherfucker is fun to drive. It's a good little car, front wheel drive. If you're interested in it, if you want to buy it from me, it is for sale. Just call me at 1-800-555-1212. Leave me a voice message. I will call you back, and we'll see if we can negotiate a little bit, haggle between $8,500 and what you would like to pay for the car, or send me an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com and make a cash offer on the car. I want $8,500 for it. I'm pretty firm. I know you're probably thinking, Steve, I just looked at NADA, and I just looked at, what's that other car thing that you get prices on? Usedcar.com, whatever the fuck it is, and they said that the retail value for that car is only $1,500. Well, I don't know about that. That may be what the book value is, but the fact that this car with new brakes, a tune-up, a new motor mount, all the shit that I did to it after I bought it from my mother-in-law when I thought it was in picture-perfect A1 condition. Not so fast, my friend. Dumped another 2 G's in this cocksucker. I want $8,500 for it. If you got it, send it. I'll ship you the car and the title, too, and I'll also send you an 8x10 autograph. Anyway, enough about that bullshit. Somebody's calling me on my phone from a gimmick number. I'm going to block that motherfucking call. Of course, my phone's off when someone randomly calls me, but I know it's a prank call. It's probably some collector or someone trying to sell some shit soliciting. Don't ever call my phone number and solicit shit, because I ain't got no time for you and I ain't got no money for your ass either. Anyway, goddamn, I digress. I got carried away with the goddamn opening of the show. But anyway, as you know, I have JR coming up. And if you want to hear some breakdown and analysis of this past Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view, a little bit of Raw and a little bit of SmackDown, stay tuned after the show, because Wade Keller of Pro Wrestling Torch checks in and we just start shooting the breeze. We talk a little bit about the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view and a little bit of Raw and SmackDown and make some analogies and comparisons. And it's always fun talking to Wade, who is coming to Podcast One in just a couple of days. Anyway, before we get into conversation with my old buddy Jim Ross, I got to ask you, are you hiring? Anyone listening looking to fill a job? If so, then you need ZipRecruiter.com so that you can find the best candidates for the position you need to fill. Great talent is important to a successful business. And with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. And let ZipRecruiter basically do the rest. Their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job. And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. ZipRecruiter finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. And here's the best part. You don't have to mess with sorting through emails or juggling calls to your office. You can simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. You heard me right. I said free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. One more time for the hearing impaired. To post your job for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Steve.
Hey, it's Shaq. And when the NBA offseason explodes like it just did, you know we're all over it on the Big Podcast with Shaq. All summer, we're bringing you the biggest guests from the NBA, the biggest stars in Hollywood, and tons of great laughs. We're way bigger than a sports podcast. So check us out this week, the Big Podcast with Shaq, with new episodes every Monday at PodcastOne.com.
Steve Austin, Unleashed. Unleashed.
Hell, I'm rolling sound. I'm at 316 Gimmick Street. Got my longtime friend, Jumping Jim Ross, White Meat Baby Face from Norman, Oklahoma, over here at the house. Remodeling is completed. Still trying to get some furniture up in here. I've been talking about this damn thing for 6 or 8 months. I'm not going to beat a dead horse. Jim, you can look around. You can still see I need some furniture. I need some pieces. We're a little echoey in this room. Let's try not to blow it up like we're at a WrestleMania with our volume. God dang. Good to see you, kid. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Good to be here. Thank you.
What are you doing out here in sunny Los Angeles?
Oh, a little work, you know, chasing a booking, chasing a payday, same old stuff.
Well, what are you doing? Doing some voiceovers with Josh Barnett with New Japan?
Yes, sir. Access TV and Mark Cuban writes good checks, and they cash, and I like them, and good group of guys to work with. So Josh and I are doing a lot of New Japan work, as some folks know, of late, and have been enjoying it.
Hey, I know you re-signed with WWE, but just in doing the New Japan pro wrestling stuff, what's been the difference for you, just calling-wise, watching the matches, and doing the voiceovers?
Every product, as you know, even back in the territory days, the territories all had their own identity, kind of representative of the bookers and the owners and their image and feel of the business. I think the WWE, obviously the biggest in the game, but there's a lot of entertainment sizzle in a WWE product, more entertainment sometimes than a traditional pro wrestling company would offer. I think that New Japan is more of that traditional pro wrestling company in theory. So even though some of their guys are doing some things that I question psychologically, but they're still basically a pro wrestling company that makes their money off of ticket sales. So I think that the in-ring product in New Japan is a little bit more old-school oriented than anybody else that's on TV right now.
So, like, when you and Josh are calling these things, y'all go to the studio, the matches have already happened, and y'all are laying down the soundtrack, correct?
Yeah, the matches happened, a few weeks earlier. Not long. We cut the delay down. When I first got there, we were like 6 months or so behind. And now the footage, the raw footage of these events come into Access, and Access TV is actually editing those matches. So we're not on a big delay at all. The last weekend, on Friday night, we aired the big match of Omega and Okada from the Dominion, the one-hour draw. And so that only happened a couple of weeks ago. So that aired last Friday on Access before the big weekend in Long Beach. So we cut that back a lot, but I'm not smart enough, Steve, to change my style. It's like if you're back in wrestling. You're not going to say, okay, Steve, can you be a high flyer now? You're going to, the ground attack is what you do, but you would be what you were and what you are. And that's kind of what I am. I can't, maybe that's been a problem for me at some times in my career. I don't know, but I like to think that my style is still reminiscent of exactly what it was. You can only provide lyrics for the music you hear. And if a match, I've seen this, I told this to guys before, you got to give me something, and I'll try to make it better, but you got to give me a little something.
Now, when you guys are calling these matches, like you said, you just called Okada Omega 2, mm-hmm. 6 Minute Broadway. Did you or do you like to watch the matches before you call them, or you see them right there face value and call it like you see it?
I have never watched or previewed a New Japan match before voicing over. I just believe in my mind's eye, maybe it's my old school stubbornness, that I'm cheating. My best work has always been my live work.
I agree.
I can't make my best work in voiceovers comparable if I've already previewed the show, because then I precondition myself. That's like me reading the spoilers. I told somebody the other day, said, the only spoiler I want to read about in the goddamn internet is Don Jardine. That spoiler. The rest of them, I don't need to know the end of the movie. Why is the obsession? Well, and they'll all tell you that do that for a living. I get it. Well, our competitors do it, so we got to do it to keep up. Okay, well, then you do it, but I ain't got to read it. I was looking at coming over to your house today on my phone that this week is the 19th anniversary of Foley being tossed to the Hell in a Cell by The Undertaker. 19 years ago on this date as you and I are talking. And if I'm glad that I didn't know he was going to take that bump, because I'm not sure that call that some people think is really, you know, iconic, for lack of a better term, I don't know what it would have been like, because I know I'd have been thinking about it all the way through, the, you know, like overthinking it. But what you heard was real.
Right.
So I want to try to replicate what you hear is real theory in my Access voiceovers. And the only way I can do that is just be clean and not preconditioned.
So if you're going to be doing voiceovers in the WWE studio, watching some old footage, you might have seen a match just because it was back in the day and they brought you in to call the match. But is there anybody in your ears producing you?
I went to the studios and did the UK special for WWE, and I had a producer in my ear, but he was very, and they did a good job, but basically just nuts and bolts, count you in, count you out. If you misspeak, which can happen, then you have the ability in a voiceover session to go pick it up.
Okay.
But other than that, not much. No, they let you do your work.
So same thing with Access TV. I think they pretty much just give you and Josh free reign to do that, right?
Absolutely. No, Access may even give us more free reign. They're not as refined as WWE. Now, look, I'll tell you this. I worked for a lot of really good companies over the years, TBS, and, you know, working even for Cowboy. A lot of the guys. I've had good jobs. But I've never been treated nicer than I've been treated at Access TV. Great people. Really, really good people. And they let you do your work. That was decided when I signed on. I said, you know, I'm a little old school, and I'm kind of hard-headed. Can you work with me on this producer thing? How about we just count you in and count you out? I said, you got it. Good idea. Done deal. Let's go. So that's kind of what we've done. But they protect me. You know, the biggest challenge for me is enunciations. Because I respect the business still, Steve, like you do, and you don't want to screw up somebody's name, for God's sakes. That's like signing an autograph to a kid, and their name is DeAndre. Well, I'm going to have to ask DeAndre how you spell your name, because I don't want to screw it up.
Right.
And so it's kind of the same thing, you know. I had to learn, and so if I screw up a name in a match, and I'm rocking and rolling, they just let me keep on going. But then I'll go back and give them some wild lines to make sure I said Shinsuke Nakamura correctly.
Right. Towards the end of your announcing days with WWE, was Vince more in your ears than he's ever been before? Was he demanding more out of you? Was there more information to process or to put out there because there's so much going on?
There's, without a doubt, I don't know if he was in my ear more or not, but I can tell you unequivocally that there was more information to process.
Yeah.
And to be in that lead role on a WWE television program far exceeds bell-to-bell play-by-play. So, and that's for better or for worse. Some people are going to say, well, I knew there was something wrong. It's television. It's the way it is. If you listen to, I love to go back and listen to old football games, you know, the old Keith Jackson, Chris Schenkel days, and I listen to their broadcasts and how pure they are and how simple they are. Fast forward to now. All these announcers got all these things to talk about, and they got to work stuff in. There's value added. There's promotional considerations. There are all kinds of ways to make more money, more information, get them to the website, blah, blah, blah. We're all doing it. So there was a lot more added to the plate. I think somebody told me, and I don't know if it's accurate or not, that one of the reasons that Mauro was challenged on SmackDown was the plethora of information that he had to kind of be the point guard for. And some guys are better at that than others. I'll tell you, Michael Cole's a lot better at it than I am. I'm glad I'm not in a position where I have to have all these things, because how do you get them all in? When do you get them all in? And how do you get them all in and not disrespect what the boys are doing in the ring? You know, the ball's in play. I don't need to be talking about Twitter.
Right.
So it's a real delicate balance, and it's damn sure not an easy job in today's world. So my hat's off to Michael Cole. I think he's a better at it than me on managing information. If you can't manage information, you can't be the lead guy on a WWE team.
Right. By the time this podcast will have dropped, New Japan will have already came to Long Beach on July 1st and 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
As we speak, that date is a couple of days away.
Yep.
You looking forward to that event?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. You know, I'm still a fan. I'm still some of my issues about today's product that being influenced by the social media applies to me too. It's not that this is the old pot calling the kettle black cliche. I am challenged to do great work at this live event coming up, and by the time somebody hears this, they're going to say, well, JR, you shit the bed, or JR, you did a pretty good job. That's the goal is to go kill it, obviously, always. Because I look at social media and, you know, I see, well, you know, and I mentioned Mauro, I love Mauro's work, and he's doing a great job. But, you know, it's like Mauro's the greatest announcer since JR. And I get these things in the past tense, like my career's dead, or I'm dead, you know, and I'm kind of alive. So I want to go out and prove to some people that may not have heard my live work as much as others that the old dog is still hung a little bit. It's still wrestling. It's still getting talent over and telling a story. But and the fans got to understand, some of my best work was during the Attitude Era. And I saw Triple H at Raw in L.A., and we were talking about rosters and stuff. And I said, well, I'll tell you, buddy, I'll take the Attitude Era roster compared to anybody's roster ever in this company's history to date. Because he didn't disagree either. And we had depth. We had quality depth. We had main event depth. We had guys all over the top dog. So I thought that was great. And I don't know if I feel that now. Is the internal competition where you want it? Is it really as much? It seemed like maybe the women have more internal competition on those two brands in Raw and SmackDown than the guys. So I'm enjoying this renaissance. I'm enjoying the fact that I'm going to be part of this historic event, as it would play, and I want to do a good job. So, and a lot of it comes back to ego. If somebody said, well, Steve, if you had one more match, your one more match would be, you'd want it to be the best match you ever had. And if you didn't want it to be that way, then you shouldn't even go take the booking, right?
Right.
So that's my deal. I've had a chance to call some great stuff, and I'm going to bring my A game every time, and I think these shows will be entertaining for you. Even a crotchety old bastard like you might like them.
Hey, you were in the locker room the other night when WWE was in the Staples Center.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been in L.A. for a couple of days. There was rumors that I was spotted out in the parking lot. as I said on a previous podcast, I wasn't nowhere near the building. I was over here in my damn house. So what was the vibe there? Was it, you know, back in the day, man, you know, I always say back in the day, but mm-hmm. any attitude there, and I will back up what you said. That roster right there was one of the deepest in the history of the business. And you got a lot of guys that are already in the Hall of Fame from that crew, but you also got some future Hall of Famers that ain't
yep.
been announced, but they're going to be
sure.
in that Hall of Fame. That's how deep that roster was, and that's a testament to how much money we were drawing. But anyway, what was the vibe you got as you went back, being gone as long as you've been gone, and come back in a major venue, the second largest market in the United States? What's the feeling you got from the boys and the girls backstage?
I have to remember my age and my tenure, that a lot of the day stars were young kids when they first discovered JR, for better or for worse. And, you know, the one thing was, a lot of guys, I hope you get to call one of my matches. That was the bottom line of most of it was, it's great to see you back. Hope you get to call one of my matches sometime. And, that's always nice to hear, because they want my voice in some of their work, and that's great. It's like me singing their music. You know, it's like an old, I might be making the Holiday Inn circuit with my band, but then somebody wants me to sing one of their songs. It's kind of cool. So that was kind of the deal. And it's just looking for advice, I just think that, and our nurse and cowboy, wrestlers had rather be treated like athletes than actors. I never was allowed to say dressing room on a Mid-South broadcast, because he'd say, "God damn it, actors. Liberace will use a dressing room.
Locker room.
A wrestler uses a locker room."
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that happens once, so I'm trying to say locker room. That's my deal. So that was his philosophy in that regard, and that was my teacher, so that's how I learned. But, these the kids are, the attitude was good. Guys are good, glad to see me, and I'm glad to be back, and, I've had good bookings. Those two British kids at the takeover event in Chicago, and they had a hell of a match, those two young kids did.
Yeah. God dang, I can't remember the names.
Pete Dunn. And Tyler Bate. Mm-hmm. Two nice British boys that worked their ass off. And it showed you that greatness can come in many packages. They slowed down. They told a story. They may have had the most fundamentally sound match of the entire night at that takeover event, arguably.
I thought they did.
They did a good job. I had a funny story. You'd appreciate this, knowing my crotchiness sometimes. I go back over there, and I go to Chicago, and I big weekend, and so I'm going to go do this match. I go to TV, the building, and go to catering. So these two guys, Tyler Bate and Pete Dunn, are sitting in catering, and I see them. And there's some more guys sitting at a table, so I summoned one to the other table. And so I was talking to him. I said, "First of all, you guys broke kayfabe pretty easy." They looked like I was being serious, I said, "I'm going to tell you, here's all I'm going to tell you. You've heard this before, and it's probably true. It is true. This is the biggest opportunity of your life. Big audience, big show, great building. But it's also the biggest opportunity of my life, because I'm coming back to work, and you need to give me something. I need something special tonight. And so you guys think about that. That here's the opportunity for all of us to get over and get back over and get, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever the word is. Whatever you want to do. Whatever words you need to hear to motivate your ass."
Yeah.
And I said, "Man, I'm coming back to work, and I've got one match tonight. It's yours. Give me something, and I'll give you something back." And I had no idea. And I was half-assed bullshitting them. But, I still wanted them to know that it was important to me. Their match was important to me. Yeah, I did Rock and Austin, three of them. How about that? WrestleMania main events. But for today, I only got those memories of Steve and Brock. I'm not going to do those anymore.
Yeah.
What's at hand for me in my life is tonight and you guys. So take that. It's special for all of us. And coming off my wife Jan's death, and, it's been an emotional year, so I was ready to go, boy. So that's how I approach all these assignments now, man. I'm going to go out there and show myself I can still get the job done, basically.
God dang, man, this is the first time we've seen each other since Jan passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, man, I called you right when all that stuff was going down.
Sure did.
Is it getting any better or getting
a little bit
easier? I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, it's getting better, Steve. It's you think that... she was my partner, and you hear all this stuff, you roll your eyes at some of these talk shows, I married my best friend, and all that stuff. Well, if you're lucky in life, you get to do that.
Yeah.
Some of us, it takes more at-bats.
Yeah.
And, but I, when I married her, just perfect, and I had almost 24 years, and she went through everything, three bouts of Bell's palsy, the death of my mother, my father, all those deaths on the roster, Owen, Brian Pillman, and then it wasn't a big deal where we all had cell phones. Well, my home phone rang all the time. And more often than not, she answered it because it's her home too, so it could have been her mom calling, for example. And, Talent's calling at all times of day and got dilemmas and issues. So she was just the best coach's wife there was, and you'd have been in our house.
Yeah.
She said, "Well, Steve's coming over. I'll do his laundry." Remember, she'd do your laundry.
Yeah.
She didn't. And she wasn't above that.
Yeah.
We didn't have a housekeeper do it. We did. She did it.
Yeah.
And she'd cook. And I had a lot of guys come over. Every time I see that cover, that cookbook we did, you and me and Rock on the cover,
yeah,
right there in our kitchen.
Yeah.
I remember that just vividly. So it's been hard. The DA is filing negligent homicide charges on this 17-year-old kid in Norman, and then this process starts all over. So to answer your question, yeah, I'm moving on. I'm moving forward as best I can. But then there's days where things like that comes up that you got to deal with that opens the wounds again. So you got to start healing again. But I just got to move forward. You know, Barry Switzer told me, a lot of people, I've said this story before, Switzer said to me, "JR, we're all dependent on you because, you know, it's a damn shame your wife died. She was a hell of a woman. But she's dead and you're not. You got to live. She'd want you to live." And so I think there's something to be said to that. You know, I've got to live. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I'm going to do good things, and I'm going to do some of my best broadcasting work. My book's coming out in October. I got that to look forward to. So I look at the glass half full instead of half empty. But I was telling him before we went on the air, I very rarely get upset anymore about things I can't control. It ain't worth it. I only got so much passion left, so I'm going to use it for the good stuff instead of the bad stuff. Simple as that.
And that was an interesting statement by Coach Switzer, though. That's very true. I mean,
yeah,
you got to live, and she would want you to live.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She was full of life. And, you know, when the doctor said we were kept waiting, a miracle, miracle, and he said, "JR, you got to understand." He took God to the side. He said, she's not going to know who you are. And she's going to be fed. She's going to be bathed. She's going to be tended to 24/7. And is that something that you and she would want? And well, we knew the answer to that. No, hell no. You know, she was coming back from the gym. She goes to the gym 5-6 days a week.
Yeah.
And great shape. Eat good. No drugs, no booze. But she was full of life, and she would not have wanted to be just a vegetable. So that's the funny thing is that I'm told that they had to do the medical examiner wanted to do, had took some time to get the medical results back on her because the family or the law, the legal team or whatever, I'm not sure, wanted to make sure she wasn't on drugs or alcohol coming home from the gym on her Vespa. You know, because people are very known to drive Vespas home from the gym drinking.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Big epidemic. So we've got a fight, not a fight on our hands. Of course, she wasn't drinking. And they had found some stuff in her system that would give you the impression she was on some drugs until they found out that it was the drugs that the hospital gave her to maintain her organs for harvesting.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a sobering goddamn statement, pal. We're going to harvest your wife's organs on Friday. I don't really need to know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Jeez. So I'm doing better, and, you know, friends, and you're right there from the get-go, and as you always were. We try to be that way for each other over the years, so I'm hanging, man.
When y'all met and then became a couple, mm-hmm, and then you got married, like, did Jen follow the business of wrestling back in the day, or was it new to you because you came into her life?
She was aware of it, but not a follower. And she became a real fan.
I knew she loved it. She was very passionate about it.
She loved it.
I mean,
yeah.
And she loved all the guys. You know, she was just, well, everybody knows how big of a sweetheart she was.
Oh, yeah, she was great.
Was it interesting, you know, bringing her up to speed about the business or letting her absorb it at whatever speed?
Yep.
How did you smarten her up, or what was that process?
She heard me on the phone and talking to everybody in the business, from Vince McMahon to Bill Watts, and, you know, and had Watts in her home, and, you know. And
was she fascinated by the business, though, just the way it worked?
Yeah.
As she
got
more and more knowledge
She's like a lot of people today. They like the soap opera, behind the scenes, off the radar information that they can solicit, read, acquire through the internet and social media. And she used to get it firsthand.
Yeah.
So she was kind of enchanted by all that stuff. And then when she got to know a lot of the talent's wives, significant others, so forth, then the roots got a little deeper. Because since she had an emotional investment in these people, because she got to know the wives or whatever, So she was a great, she had great respect for the talent and the business in general. Her big goal, she had two goals this year. We talked about this early in the year. She wanted to come to WrestleMania and walk the red carpet at the Hall of Fame because she had her, she had already got all of her Louis Vuitton stuff. She was a big Louis Vuitton person. God almighty, I got a room full of that. And none of it fits me, by the way. So, and then she wanted to hear my, this, I'm making your point. She said, I can't wait to hear your pop. when you get introduced at WrestleMania. Well, I hadn't even signed a contract yet. So she was under the auspices that, that WWE and I would come to an agreement and I would go back, get my jersey back and go back on the team.
Yeah.
And that by doing that, she could come to walk the red carpet at the Hall of Fame and then hear my pop at the event. So we didn't get to do that, but I'm still a firm believer without sounding too crazy that she saw it. She felt it, but just her presence wasn't there. So, you know, we got made it. I'm glad I didn't sign that contract till Friday night before WrestleMania. I didn't know I was going to, I wasn't done. We haven't, did not have a done deal. And I sure as hell didn't know, I didn't sign under the auspices. Well, if you'll sign the contract, you get to call the last match. I didn't care what match I called. If you're going to get a sign at WrestleMania, go do it.
Right.
It's an honor to be a part of that deal, especially in my situation where I've been so disconnected from them for so long. It's a great reunion for me. But then they said, well, Vince wants you to call the last match. Well, I said, okay, what's the last match? Because it could have been a lot of matches, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be Taker. Oh. So when he told me it was Taker's last match, obviously my pulse quickened. Business picked up, as I might say. And I also thought, oh, my God, this could be Mark's last one. Because Taker going on last, and, you know, could be it. And then the way it all played out, it looks like it was. I don't know if it is or not. But so it, the whole thing took a big meaning for me, you know. So Jan's absence, she'd only been dead a few days.
I know. I was, man, when you said, hey, I'm going to go ahead and fulfill my bookings and go do what I was signed up to do. I didn't know how to take it because you don't know what how you'd react being in the same shoes.
You know, there ain't no mourner's manual. There ain't no manual that tells you textbook how to grieve. This is grieving 101. You know, it's like right now, you know, people, I had a woman the other day tell me, have you started dating yet? And I said, oh, not really. Then I had another one tell me, well, another woman give me her advice, unsolicited, God bless them, can't live with them, can't live without them type deal. Well, I'm sure in a year or so when you start seeing other women, you know, maybe this will be easier. And I'm thinking, I got two sets of rules here now. I got one that I should have already been back in the hunt, right?
Yeah.
I got another one that says you need to wait another year. So there ain't no right. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. So all you can do is.
I'm thinking that's the furthest thing from your mind right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I want to get involved in more drama and more high maintenance. And, you know, if I could guarantee myself someone that would quasi measure up to Jan, then yeah. But I'm unfortunately, any woman that associates herself with me is going to always be in that unfortunate position. You're going to be compared to the last one. And the last one can't be replaced.
When you got the heads up that you were going to do the commentary for Undertaker's match, as you saw the situation play out, in your mind, is he done? Just in your opinion.
I kind of think so. You know, our business, you're one of the few guys that actually said I'm done and done.
I didn't want to say I'm done.
Yeah.
I had to, and I did. And we didn't announce that was going to be my last match. You knew it was going to be my last match, Vince. Maybe just a handful of other people, but nobody on that damn roster really knew that was going to be my last match. And, yeah, I rode off in the sunset, and I stayed gone.
Yeah, you kept your word in that respect. Yeah. So did Shawn Michaels. His credit, he said 10 opportunities, I bet, to come back and do something big.
Yeah.
Make a great payday. Probably a seven-figure payday if he wanted it.
Yeah.
And he would earn it at WrestleMania. But he says, I'm not doing it anymore. So I admire that. You know, and I, of course, worked for my big mentor, Cowboy Bill Watts, retired, and came out of retirement multiple times. Every time he needed a boost in business, he brought himself back. So, you know, I don't know. I think I was glad to get that gig, and I'm thinking that Taker probably is done. And And if that is the case, then I'm honored that he and Vince saw the confidence in me that want me to be part of that soundtrack, be a part of that deal. It was great for me. It's a funny deal. I never saw a TV format all day. I got there, and you know, at the stadium, and finally got all my stuff together and where I was going to be. And I talked to Taker a little bit. I talked to Taker. He was on the bus. We didn't even talk about the match. I never asked him if he was going to go over. I never asked him if he was going to not. I didn't ask him if there's going to be anything special to do. We just shot the breeze. And, of course, he knew Jan as well. Yeah. So we talked about her a little bit. And I didn't want to bring him down, and I didn't want to come down. So we kind of hugged, and I went on about my merry way. But I never found out, yeah, he's going to go over past 20 or past 30. We're going to put 30 in, or he's going to catch one, whatever. Nothing. And I never found it out. And I never even saw a format. I didn't know how long they're even scheduled to go. I went out there and sat down, did my thing, and saw the monitor and just called it as he saw it.
Right.
I wish it had been, you know, I'm not a big fan of the three-man booth because it's not the people. It's the crowdedness of it.
I agree.
I just think it's smoother to listen. I think it's a show that's easier to listen to and one that is easier to retain information if you're not hearing too many voices. So it's not an indictment on the three people or four people.
No.
It's just too many people. Yeah,
the number of people.
That's it.
Yes, I agree. What was Vinny like walking to the ring? I mean, with everything that happened?
Surreal.
Yeah.
Surreal. And here's the thing. I have yet to go back and see that entrance. And, you know, I saw people when I was walking in the ring crying. Oh, there's OJR. And his wife just died. Well, hell, I was almost ready. I couldn't look at him because I was going to cry. So I really tried to stay focused on that announce position. My funny thought was, don't trip and fall and don't embarrass yourself. But it was a little bit surreal. I had to really fight to not get emotional. It was just hard because people were looking me in the eye that knew me. A lot of those VIP type people in the front row, you know, they knew her and they were crying. So she said, Jesus, God, I can't look. I got to get there and get my job done. I can't be an old fool, you know. I can't be able to start crying. So it was emotional. It was emotional, but it was very exciting. And again, it shows you the old man's booking acumen. When that son of a bitch is on, he's on.
Right.
He put me in a position to get the most emotional return on the JR character that he could get. The last match. And here comes that music. I was unannounced. I was unadvertised. And it was a real surprise. And social media, I don't think he'd got too much on it. They knew I was coming back. We wasn't sure, this, that, and the other. But anyway, it was good. I told somebody, I said, how'd you like your booking? I said, if I had been the booker myself, I couldn't have booked myself better. It was the best booking I could have gotten.
Right.
And it's irrelevant about the finish or should take her. You know, God, we're just killing each other. Well, he should have won. This should have won. He sold too much. What now? Oh God! Just slap the shit out of me, will you? While you're at it, you know, just let me go call a wrestling match. You know, and let's don't worry about the finish and returns or next week or next month. Easy.
All right, we're going to take a pause for the calls and help out the sponsors who let me do this show for you twice a week for free. And then we're going to come back and talk to JR about his podcast, The Raw Support, and his take on Big Cass turning heel on Enzo Amore, Samoa Joe's current run at WWE, and Kenny Omega. But like I said, let me say thanks first to True Car, one of the longtime sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. And if you're in the market for a car, then you need to check out True Car. True Car gives you the price and information you need to feel confident about your purchase. When you register a True Car, you'll see what other people in your local area paid for the car you want. And from there, you can connect with a local True Car certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. True Car shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by True Car certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. And you'll also see all the dealer incentives before you get to the lot so you can feel confident about that price when you show up. True Car makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new
or used vehicle, and the stats do not lie. Over 3 million cars have been sold to True Car users by the True Car Certified Dealer Network. There are over 13,000 dealers in that network with some 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available. So do yourself a favor and go to True Car for your next car buying experience. True Car doesn't just make the process easier, it'll also save you some money. True Car users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
There are 120,000 unsolved murder cases in America.
It was the next day that I found out from my parents what had happened, that my sister was killed.
Each one is called a cold case.
Sometimes you have to look really closely to find the evidence.
Damn it, I killed her.
Damn it, I killed her.
Cold Case Files, the podcast.
Garcia is walking into the home of a real monster.
I was nervous. I realized what kind of person I was dealing with.
It's a goosebump moment.
Download new episodes every Tuesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
Steve Austin. Steve Austin. Unleashed. Unleashed.
What have you been talking about lately on your podcast?
Well, as this airs, last week I had the irrepressible Jim Cornette on there.
How was that?
Oh, buddy. He is probably as consistently as entertaining a guest as one could ask for in the podcast world. He's got his own podcast. He's doing a couple of podcasts a week. And then this week I got Dave Meltzer on there to talk about the New Japan weekend in Long Beach. All that stuff and everything. And Meltzer knows more about everything than pretty much anybody. And he's a great student of the New Japan culture. And that's kind of why I really enjoyed working with Josh Barnett, because he trained there, he wrestled there, all the MMA stuff he's done in Japan and New Japan. He's headlined a Tokyo Dome show. So he's got a good feel for the culture and great submission recognition, which is really good for me. And but Dave has got that great product knowledge as well. So we're going to talk about that and all kinds of other stuff.
Will you ask him about that 6 1/4 match?
Yeah.
That Omega Okada had on number 2? Because
I have
6 1/4.
That's tough. I called it. I liked it, but I don't know what 6 1/4 means. Is it? If you look at it strictly on the symbolism of it, it's the greatest match ever since the ratings have been done on the Wrestling Observer site.
Yes.
That covers a lot. And the Wrestling Observer's been around forever, and Dave's done a terrific job without question.
And he's highly respected.
As by everybody that's got any sense. And I don't have their egos aren't out of condition. But I don't know what that means other than that I just think when I saw the match and somebody came in and asked me, "Was that 6 1/4 stars?" I don't know how to say it. If Dave thought it was, so that it was. But for me, it wasn't the best match that I've ever called, in my opinion. I don't really know what was, but I can tell you that the three matches that Flair and Steamboat had in 1989, and I worked all three of them with three different partners, and which was really an adventure, good adventure. But you can take any of those three matches that will compare very favorably to Okada and Omega 2. I thought Okada Omega 1 in the Tokyo Dome might have been a little bit better match, in my opinion. I think that the magic and the mystique of going 60 got on that extra star. Maybe.
Right. I like both of them. I thought they were awesome. I love both of them, let me put it that way. And so, man, when you look at the different eras, and I mean, there was a couple of Flair window matches that were off the charts as well. Just the way the business has evolved, because it's almost like comparing great basketball or great football players from a different era to the current era. In the old eras, just like in the old days, well, when guys were still incorporating high spots with regards to pro wrestling, they almost look in slow motion to what the guys are doing these days. So it's different. It's evolved. It's different. So regardless of that, I mean, they were just fantastic matches. There were parts of the first one I thought that had more sense of urgency with respect to covers that I appreciated from trying to get that 1, 2, 3. And the second one, which was a 60-minute Broadway, was awesome as well, but sometimes lacking a sense of urgency for those covers, and that's being super technical on a tremendous
match. But psychologically,
match.
It's an issue. Subconsciously, you are being told that there isn't a sense of urgency, so something this match just doesn't – it may go longer because the hour time limit. I can see that point. You've got to work an hour Broadway no differently than you'd work a 20-minute – house show match,
right?
Live event match. You got to have false finishes, and if you don't have false finishes, you're not trying to win. You take a lot of the drama completely out of your presentation. Why don't you try to beat him? You know, are you really, as we would BS, paid by the hour? If you're paid by the hour, then hey, have at it.
Yeah.
Take your time.
But I mean, I love both matches. I think both guys are just super talented, unbelievable, and I've listened to some of the Kenny Omega interviews, and man, that guy's a real deep thinker. He really goes about a process.
He's a good podcast guest. You should get him on sometime. I've had him on a couple of times over the years. He's very a very provocative thinker, very forward thinker, and he's very reminiscent to me and indicative of today's. More today's wrestler and what they think and how they act and how they perceive the business. And I'm not saying any of this in a negative way. It's just there's a new era and a new wave of thinking and there for us old guys, we've got to kind of be willing to listen to their point of view, because their point of view sometimes is not what we were raised with.
I look at this kid. I call him a kid. I'm 52. He's probably 33, 35, maybe. I think whatever it does, if he stays in New Japan, hands down, he's one of the best in the world, if not the best in the world, in my opinion. If he came to the WWE, if he had any interest in doing so, I think that guy could be the next big thing.
Kenny Omega?
Yes, I do.
Wow. Well, that's high praise. I like his work. You know, in any creative proposition, even in a sports situation, you got to go to the right team. And Kenny Omega, if everybody in the higher powers that be in WWE could believe what you believe and shared your confidence in him, then I would say he'd have a chance to be really extraordinary. There's things he can do better. We all can, but he's really a thinking man's pro wrestler without question.
And the thing is, I don't know if it's going to happen. I say he has the potential to be. Mm. If he was given the platform just to not be put in a box and be able to do... Go ahead.
The platform is one thing. I agree with you. But when you get on that platform, what do you do with it? What the talent? No, what do you... Because we were talking about this again earlier, that the media and fans and people that share with our interest in social media seem to always, more often than not always, that's overgeneralizing, but more often than not, believe that when there's a malady or a push has gone awry or a talent's not getting over, that it's always a litany of others' fault, but exclude the talent. It's not the talent's fault.
Right.
And I am of the belief, and this is me, and you were the greatest talent of all, so you can certainly disagree. We've had disagreements. I believe the talents can take more responsibility of what they do and can have a bigger hand in their career than some of them do. Some of them want to show up here. Where's my sheet? Where's my promo? Where's my, right. What am I doing tonight? So you got here and you didn't know what you're doing. That's what you're telling me. So the most important thing you're going to do all week is television, and you didn't know shit about it. You didn't ask a writer. You didn't ask anybody. You just got in a car, in your damn rental car, and you got the TV and got, first thing you did before you asked about your creative was you had to go to catering. Brother's got to eat. Well, then brother, go eat. So the platform is one thing, but then if Kenny Omega got the platform, would Kenny Omega be the entrepreneur and the producer, the creator, the writer, the athlete, call combined, like you were, for example, right, and others that we know, to make it over the top?
Right.
Because if you don't have that in you, you can't get over, the company can't get you over the top by itself. It won't happen.
But I was watching an interview that Triple H did with somebody, and he said, what's the one thing that he's looking for most in a person that he's interviewing with to bring into the company? And the number one thing he said was charisma. Mm-hmm. And when I've seen this kid, I've never met him, But I saw some of his interviews over in New Japan. He speaks fluent Japanese.
Yeah.
He lives over there. And boy, all of a sudden he started lighting up with the Japanese language. But then just speaking in English, he's just like a, he was like a lightning bolt on that microphone.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, here's a guy with seemingly what I'm getting out of my computer screen watching it online is just a lot of charisma.
Right.
A lot of presence and a bigger than life personality, and he can go like a sumbitch in a ring. So he's got all that. He's been in the business 15 years or better, so he knows all that. He knows how to get over. He can get over if the company's, you know, really behind him and gives him that platform. And he's, I think he's a guy that's hungry enough to be on board and say, hey, I want to be number one. I think that's one of the big reasons. I guess I was listening to one of his interviews with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had unfinished business, as he kind of put it, to do over there. But, man, I just think it may never happen. He may never go to New York.
But just
if I look out there, Jim, and say, who could be the next big draw?
He's there.
He's at the top of my list.
Right.
May it happen or will it happen? Maybe it will and maybe it won't. But that's what I think his potential is. And he's doing tremendous right now. I don't want to say I'm putting him in a box and saying, you can only be this over in New Japan.
Right.
I'm just saying, man, I see so much in this kid. That's how high I am of him.
I talked to him the last time. I thought he was very mature about WWE because I asked him point blank, are you going to, you know, my belief, and I told him that my belief is that he would be in WWE someday. He didn't say he wouldn't because it just makes sense. If you're a pro wrestler and you don't have the chance, Are you take yourself out of a chance to go to WWE at some point in your career in your productive years? You might be cheating yourself, in my money wise. Here's what impressed me about this kid. He still has unfinished business to do in New Japan because he has accepted some portion of ownership of his role in that company.
Right.
So the being in New Japan to Kenny Omega is important. It's not just about Kenny Omega and his payday or Kenny Omega and his gimmick sales or what the Bullet Club does or blah, 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 a million things. It's about can he help build the brand that's funding his life right now. And that's what they're doing. And he's taken enough ownership to say, I've got unfinished business. I'm going to stay here and try to get this company elevated more. Now, the good news for him as an entrepreneur is that as they are being elevated, so will he, because he's figured in. He's
right.
a top guy. So that means when his deal is up, early 2018, as I understand it, that I think he'll be in WWE sometime in 2018. Because as long as the contract status there is, I'm not so sure that guys get long-term deals there in New Japan. And I know at one time all the contracts came due in January, which I found to be absurd. I couldn't even believe that. I said, that can't be true. Can you imagine every contract, all your contracts can be due in a month? You talk about losing a roster.
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
Yeah, potentially, right? And of course, they did. They lost AJ, Nakamura, Gallows, and Anderson, all in January. Didn't renew. That's a pretty good load, man. So those are all good talents. All four of those guys are good talents. I think Anderson and Gallows are a much better team than they've been positioned as being. I think Shinsuke Nakamura, we haven't seen his best yet. And I think AJ Styles may be as good a worker as I've seen in years. He may be the best worker in the world right now. Here's how I look at things. I'm a little sentimental bastard. Sometimes I say, would the Cowboy book AJ? You damn right. Because he's like Ricky Morton. He can sell and make great comebacks. And he can sell. He's fundamentally sound. He knows psychology. That's like I talked to that big Braun Strowman the other day.
Good kid.
North Carolina kid, right?
Yep.
But he's a good-looking boss. Now, there's one I used to say, would Cowboy like this guy? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Would he like him? God almighty. You know, Ernie Ladd, would Ernie Ladd like this big bastard? Oh, my God. I said, he's got a good feel for the business, and he understands that he's got a great future if you don't do anything stupid. And I thought he and Reigns had a good piece of business the other day on Raw. It was interesting because it was similar to what Joe and Brock did.
Right.
A non-match physicality.
Yeah.
And you got to make them unique, as you know. But when you got 3 hours like they do on Monday, you got to be a little bit flexible. But he's a good kid. There's a lot of those good kids like that. But I like Omega. Back to him, and I think I can't see him not being at WWE next year at some point in time. He owes it to himself before he gets to be 38 or 39. to try.
Well, you got to think about it like this. From a business standpoint, you hit 38, 39, and then you come in on the WWE side, you think, okay, just according to how most of these careers play out, you know, kind of back in the day, you hit 38, that might be your prime money-making years,
yep.
You know. But all of a sudden, with that style that he brings, is a little bit different, I think. So I think the window of opportunity kind of starts to close down from a corporate standpoint, from that machine pushing you. They want a longer window of opportunity for you to run strong and, you know, be able to go. And with that push, and you're just going to come over and get over immediately. There's going to be work to be done. You got to figure out that formula. What is it? So that window needs to be larger for the company to invest wholly to say, this is our guy. We're going to run with him because we know he's got four solid years in him at least. Or something, you know, something like that. You just can't come at the tail end and say, okay, I'm here. Well, what you got left?
Right.
You know, to me, don't you see that?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think he's got a fish to cut bait. And that's why I think 2018 is an important year for Kenny Omega. Anybody listen to this show, and they're Kenny Omega fans, and they've seen his great work lately, and it is great. He is outstanding. He is evolving, and he's improving. But he's got a fish to cut bait simply because of the calendar.
Hell, moving on along, let's go back to some WWE action. Kenny Omega, wish you all the best of luck in the world with your careers that unfold. Big fan. Love your work. JR just recently, Big Cass, looked like he just decided to go heel on Enzo. I like what I'm seeing out of this guy because when he first came in, just looking at his body, kind of reminds me a little bit of Barry Windham to a degree and a couple of other guys, not just purely Barry Windham, but just kind of the way he moves. He's pretty graceful for a big guy. Barry was very graceful. But nonetheless, kid has some athleticism to him. Good stature. He's starting to show a little bit of a mean streak now. And that promo he cut on Enzo in the last 2 weeks, the deer in the headlights look is starting to go, and he's getting some more confidence and swagger. I like what I see. I think this guy's got a lot of potential written all over him if he is continued to be booked properly. What are your thoughts about this young man?
I like him. I think I remember sitting in a meeting in Orlando at an NXT production meeting. And the ESPN cameras were there to film, tape, more specifically, the behind the scenes. I think they did a documentary or something on it. Anyway, they were talking about talents, and his name came up. And somebody in the meeting said, in the production meeting said, about Cass, said, well, he's not getting it as quickly as we thought he might. He's not acquiring the timing, the taste, the feel of the business like we thought he would. We were a little disappointed in his timeline. And so maybe it's time to rethink this, you know. And I was there, and so I was just a visitor. And I said, well, you know, I had a little experience in this area, and I kind of understand what the head honcho likes. He likes seven-footers.
Yep.
And I said, you can't teach that. And I'm a son of a bitch. They don't use that. It made the air on a little clip, right? But then that's in their promo. But you can't.
Yeah.
And so the deal is, you got to give those guys that have that physical package you can't go find as easily, and you sure as hell can't teach it. You got to give them a little bit more time before you cut bait. So you just keep fishing, and then as soon as time you got to feel that. So it's not, well, when is that? 6 months? It's not a number. It's a feel.
Right.
So. The kid is, when I went to TV, to Raw, in the Staples Center a week or so ago, he was one of the first guys came to me and shook my hand and good to see you. He's a fan. He grew up listening to my shit, you know? So, and I appreciate that, but he's a good kid. My point being is there were some talents that, well, JR's old timer, he's old school, you know, I'm surprised he wasn't at catering all day type deal, looking for a booking. And so they didn't know about, some of them didn't come around because they just don't have the respect that others do. This kid's got great respect for his predecessors in the business. I like him. And like you mentioned, he's not a Clydesdale. He's got pretty good feet, pretty athletic. So if you allow him the time to acquire the feel for the game, and like you said, lessening the deer in the headlight look on the interviews is a great sign he's getting it.
Mm-hmm.
So
He's also starting to feel some momentum and get some confidence in himself and start to believe in himself. And he's getting swings. He's getting at-bats.
Absolutely.
And he's starting to hit them. And so I just think he looks a lot more comfortable.
He's getting some quality minutes, and he's taking advantage of them because he could have crapped the bed on those promos very easily.
Right.
Like anybody could, but he didn't. And I'll tell you something else. His little former partner set the table up pretty good for him, I thought.
Oh, absolutely. I love Enzo.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what they end up doing with Enzo, but he's a firecracker in that dressing room. He's an X factor.
Charisma.
Charisma out the ass.
He's the kind of guy that here's what he reminds me of. If I was an NFL guy, I'd want him on my special teams because I know he would run through walls for the team.
Yep.
And he may not ever start. He may never be in the main event at WrestleMania. I don't know. But I do know this, every time out, he gives you a great effort, and he's reliable.
But also along with that, when he walks by you, you feel something, you're like, that guy's different. I mean, he's got this it factor to him, not that not everybody has.
Right.
And so when you have, you know, there's some pretty vanilla guys there. Not everybody is. That's not a blanket statement, but he's a special guy. So I think that just him being around – aside from the performance, but it's like when Pillman was around, or like when Brian walked by, you felt it. He raised the bar.
Yeah.
I think this kid, you know, Brian was, you know, much more accomplished in the ring, obviously, but this kid has that same type of quality that Brian has. He's different and he's unique.
Yeah, I like that. That's what you look for. And sometimes you can't tell if somebody's going to be unique until you're around them a little bit and you give them time to develop something, to develop a feel for something. So patience is a big thing. I think that's why, quite frankly, over time, when NXT is going to be made up more of recruited, trained talents, and you've got to place them to work, then you're going to see that the advancement of some of these, when they get moved up, they're going to be better. Right now, NXT's got a lot of really good talents that have had good indie experience or Ring of Honor experience or whatever. You know, Adam Cole and Roddy Strong and, you know, all those others. Samoa Joe, for God's sakes. So they're ready to go. Those guys are ready to go. And it's when their time is right, they'll get in the game. Somebody asked me, they said, do you think those guys get frustrated by being in NXT? I said, well, look, if they're smart, they're going to make sure their creative is good before they make a big splash on Raw or whatever. They're in a great spot. They're making – Steve, I bet you that some of those kids down there are making six figures. And maybe you got to make six figures now to make ends meet. I don't know. But it's not a bad existence being in NXT. You're getting exposure. You're getting in the system. You're giving everybody a chance to see what you got. And like I tell those kids, I said, don't give anybody a damn reason to not want to do business with you. Ever. Because they don't need to do business with shit disturbers, and they won't. So don't do that.
But that NXT, I mean, for the guys that are down there, I mean, man, that's a
cool thing.
If you want to be in this business, if you want to be a pro wrestler,
you got to get there.
That's the holding pattern to be in my opinion.
That's your destination,
and
buddy.
That's with respect to Ring of Honor, anybody else out there. But you're talking about stateside systems. I know you can make a living wherever. People get mad at me all the time. Oh, everybody, beer. People get mad at me for saying, you know, that the WWE is really the only place you can be to make money. Or make a living. You know, Young Bucks are doing Ring of Honor, New Japan. I mean, they're doing fine.
Yep.
You know, so, yeah, there's other places you can do it. By and large, to be in the major leagues, in my opinion, is WWE.
I use the Young Bucks as an illustration. And I call a lot of their matches, they're a little Hardy, little Ricky Robert type thing, yep. And I like them. But they're doing good for now, because as the bump card gets more full, where you get more dependent on big paydays and big money opportunities on those big chunks of cash, whether it be merch or whatever. If they think they're selling a lot of merchandise now on the indies, piece of middle here, there, and yon, you know what it's like when you get in the machine and you're on all those merch tables and everywhere around the world. It's a different ballgame. So they're doing good for now, but you're right, Steve. When you get at some point, I mentioned this earlier, if you're in the wrestling business, at some point, you want to be in WWE. And it's not damning anything else. It's not, and that's the thing about our business right now. Everybody's so damn sensitive about everything. It's the social media is heightened. Everybody's, you know, so people get pissed off and they go on Twitter and argue with each other. And it's like, I don't know. Are we being? I sometimes I think you hear all these Twitter arguments. Are we being worked? Are we so gullible that are we like a largemouth bass and this controversial fishing hook comes in the water and we just nab that son of a bitch like we're starving?
Yeah.
But we're living in that world, so I don't know. I'm enjoying it, but it pisses me off sometimes. But I told you earlier, I'm going to stop getting pissed off over things I can't control, and I can't control that.
So. Hey, one more thing I want to bring up coming out of NXT system is there for a long ass time, they finally brought him out, put him on the main roster, Samoa Joe. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy,
love
he's
it.
Been one of my favorite workers for years.
Yep.
And I just said, man, he's not a body guy.
Oh.
He's not the prettiest guy in the damn locker room. But it doesn't matter.
No.
You know, he's just a hellacious worker. He's one of the best workers in the world, in my opinion.
Well, Samoa Joe is a player. And you judge his results on the field. And I had him on one of my ringside shows in the weekend of WrestleMania in Santa Clara. He was a surprise guest. And I said on that show that if I was, and I wasn't in WWE at the time, if I was booking WWE or if I had influence in the booking of WWE or whatever, I would have, a WrestleMania main event would be Joe and Brock. And I would build it, and then the time it got there, people were going to be going crazy to see it. So we know they're going to wrestle before WrestleMania, but that doesn't really bother me. I'm glad they're having their match. I think it'll be one of the matches of the year. And I said this before, you might get a kick out of this. You certainly will understand it. The backstage monitor we sold out,
mm-hmm.
and some of their lockups will make some of their peers uncomfortable
because mm-hmm.
they will bring the shit.
Yeah.
And you know, two alpha males. Two tough guys. There'll be no apologies. Let's just go out and work.
Right.
You know, because we've heard Vince say, well, you guys apologize now. He said it about to you because he knew his working punch was going to be one that hurt. Steve, I apologize now. So, you know, I'm sure you said the same thing.
Yeah.
But that's the deal. I think those guys are going to have a hell of a outing. And those are the kind of matches that I would, if Vince called or sent me word, hey, JR, why don't you come to Dallas and call this Lesnar-Joe match? Hell, I'll drive myself down and pay my own way. And, you know, for a guy like me at my stage of life, that's the fountain of youth because that's back to old school, two tough, legit tough son of a bitches that aren't out there playing the role of a pro wrestler. They're not locking up like two invalids. They're locking up like two men, two athletes of any gender. So I think it's going to be great. Good booking. I think it's a smart. I'm more interested in that than anything they've booked this year. Just about. I'm trying to think what's better, and I know that somewhere down the road it's going to be Strowman and Lesnar. That's foolproof, right?
Right.
But and I probably would say that to WrestleMania. I know that one time they talked about doing it at SummerSlam. But boy, right now to me, and this is again, people misconstrue this. I'm like I'm dissing somebody. I'm not. To me, the most attractive match that the match I'm most interested in seeing someday, other than Joe and Lesnar, is Lesnar and Strowman. I'm curious as to what they would get out of that match and how athletic the big boy would be and how Brock would be. And, you know, there's a two-way street here. You know.
And that's an interesting match to have because stylistically, I don't want Braun to be too athletic to start doing stuff that is out of his wheelhouse.
No herking around us.
No. But nope. I mean, just stick with the ground game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't need to jump off shit.
Mm-mm.
You're going to kill yourself.
Yeah, no.
Kill yourself off.
Yeah. No, athletic meaning when you go to deliver a tackle, run through the guy.
Right.
Be athletic. Don't stumble around like you're 400 pounds. I'm certainly not advocating Young Buck style.
Right.
And that's for Young Bucks.
Right.
He's 6'7" or 6'8". He's 300 pounds.
Right.
He don't need to do that stuff. So, to me, right now, the Lesnar Braun Strowman match, based on how Strowman was building before he hurt his elbow, has my attention. I'm more interested in that than anything I can think of. Other than, I will tell you, you felt something in the crowd at the last pay per view with Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ. The fans that follow their career know they got a great history, and they have. I've seen it. One of the best matches I've ever seen was Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ. We haven't seen that yet in Shinsuke, but that would be another WrestleMania match I think would be a great wrestling match.
I'll go with you on, yeah, I'd like to see what Braun Strowman versus Brock Lesnar will be whenever it happens. Right now, Braun is still building for that.
Yep.
He's not ready.
No, next year.
But he has been acclimating to the business and absorbing it very, very well. I've been a big fan of his. He's got great upside. He has everything working for him. No limitations.
No.
The sky is the limit for this kid. He could be a big-time player. So I'm behind him. But for here, right now, finally, they put Joe on that damn roster, and the booking was what it was. Now they, obviously put him in there with Brock.
I love it.
Good piece of business. Mm-hmm. Damn near choked Brock out. Paul Heyman really stuck it to him on the promo on the backside of that. It's going to be a hell of a damn matchup. What I like here is you have the Suplex City style versus Joe's work and a melding of those two, the combination. Who knows what it's going to be, but just like you said, just the lockups, the physicality. And here's a guy that they took forever to bring up to WWF to begin with, mm-hmm. NXT for a long time, finally bringing the main roster. Not a big fan of the entrance music, but I love Joe. And he's in a serious position right now. So whatever happens out of this match, win, lose, or draw, Joe comes out on the high side whatever happens. He's more valuable. So keep him valuable and have him working with high-profile people. Keep him in a money spot.
That's right.
He ain't the best-looking guy on the roster. He ain't got the best body. He's one of the best workers in the world.
Yep.
He has a presence and a charisma. Keep that mean streak on him. Keep him heated up and keep him with people that matter. Mm. And you got a guy that's ready to go in those top three spots on a pay-per-view.
Without question. And he can be a heel or he can be a baby face. He can work with a green guy or vet. He has the ability to acclimate his style to where he can accentuate the guy he's working with.
But keep him special. You're making him special. Well, he's a special talent because he's got talent. Mm-hmm. But here's a guy that if you get a guy hot, keep throwing gas on him. Okay, you brought up Nakamura Styles. Okay, I know that Styles is going to bring the best out of Shinsuke because mm-hmm. I don't think, from what I've seen, we've seen Shinsuke's best in WWF. I always say the F. We know what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. Maybe he's just playing his cards and that's all he needs to do. But I barely know AJ. I've only shook his hand a couple of times, but I know he's one of the best workers mm-hmm. in the world, and I know that when he goes out there, he's going to lay his shit in, and he's out there to have the best match of the night or of the year.
Right.
So he will bring the best out of that guy, and I'm sure they're probably good friends from way back or whatever the deal is, but from what I know of AJ, if there's one night that Shinsuke is going to really work his ass off, it's going to be with Styles.
Yeah, he's got to be there's a better side of Shinsuke that we haven't seen.
And I don't mean to come down on Shinsuke. I'm not throwing him under the bus. I'm just saying, from what I've seen in Japan, it's impressed me more than what I've seen in WWF. That's just what I've seen, dude. That's just a litmus test.
Getting acclimated. And there's a lot of issues there that we take for granted that we don't even want to take in consideration. Moving,
good point.
Living in Orlando as opposed to living in for his entire life in Japan, and the promotion. He was a fixture. He would be like you leaving WWE and going to work for them in New Japan back when you're hot. Well, of course, we know that's ridiculous, but the issue, you're not going to leave money behind. But the point being is that he was a fixture there. He was a massive, massive star. When I saw him for the first time in person at Wrestle Kingdom 9, when I came back, I told some guys in WWE, I told you, I saw the most charismatic sumbitch I've ever seen in my entire life.
I remember the conversation. I saw it myself just on a computer screen.
I said, this sumbitch is special, and his kicks and his strikes are just lethal. And to be honest with you, sometimes I wonder, and I don't need to answer this, so maybe you can answer it. I wonder if he doesn't think that him kicking as aggressively in WWE would be tolerated based on how hard he kicked in. I saw him kick in New Japan. Different feel, different style, different expectation. I don't know. I'm not saying the talents are tougher, but there's a different, maybe there's a different expectation level, but there's something missing, a little bit missing in what he does. But I'm encouraged to know that there is greatness there. The right person, the right angle, the right situation. I've often wondered, and it's never going to probably happen. I keep thinking, and maybe I'm just too old school thinking-wise, what a heel he would make.
Yeah, he would make a great heel, Jim. I agree with you on that. But here's my biggest problem is you bring in this charismatic Michael Jackson, Freddie Mercury, badass shoot worker.
Yeah.
He's the king of strong style. Holy shit. You know how good a marketing platform that is for gimmicks, T-shirts? The king of strong style? And you bring him over, and he's going 30-minute Broadways with half the damn roster. Debuted down there at WrestleMania 32 NXT with Sami Zayn and went 30 minutes.
In person.
It was a hell of a match.
It was a hell of a match. Yes, sir.
It did a lot of credit to Sami Zayn and Shinsuke, but here's the king of strong style. And then all of a sudden, comes in, he's working with Dolph. It took him a long time to finish off Dolph for the king of strong style. You understand where I'm going with this gimmick?
Yep.
You know?
Well, you know.
That's booking, though.
That's, yeah, that is booking.
But what is the plan? You got this guy who's one of those talents that you just don't come around every single day. He's special. He comes in. You treat him like he's just a regular Joe Blow.
I'll tell you this. There was a guy named the Ringmaster came in that nobody thought was going to be special. And he, even though you had, you know, the Ringmaster had DiBiase and all that good stuff, Teddy was uncomfortable in that role. It wasn't his natural fit. And he'll tell you. And you sure as hell wasn't a Ringmaster. But you did. But the thing about it is, you broke loose. You created a different image. The Ringmaster went away. I'm just saying. I don't know if you found yourself,
right,
and you found a way to communicate with the decision makers to help create a difference. So you learned your way around. You got the feel. You saw what you could do. I can play on this level, but I can play better if I'm this, not that. Maybe he's there, Steve. I don't even know. You know, again, I don't know if his family's with him in Orlando. I don't know if his, you know, you got to believe that his extended family isn't.
Right.
So there's a lot of adjustments to make and things of that nature. I don't know if he's happy or sad or whatever. I just know that he's one of the most charismatic in-ring talents I've seen in my career. And I also know that it seems like he's just a smidge under for me, the desired aggression that I've seen him execute before.
Well, that's me going back to the same match where you were there in person. Mm-hmm. I was watching, you know, on my computer and sensing the same thing about how great this kid is, how dynamic and charismatic he is. I mean, I'm cheering for him.
Yeah.
I want him to be better and bigger and more than what he is, because I know he's capable of it. So I want to see him get there and make a difference.
Well, it's I think it'll happen. I've seen WWE, and I've been a party to it. My hands and fingers are dirty in this deal, where we've had to revise people and restart guys, and it's not always right the first go around. Some talents take longer to acclimate to the system. And the travel, and the locker room, and the protocol, and all the other things that they endure. So I'm looking at it optimistically that the accumulation of people involved in this decision will see that there's more to him than they're getting. And you've made an investment in this talent, probably a significant investment, because he was making big money in Japan, from what I hear. So you owe it to yourself to try to monetize your investment. It's there. It just hasn't been... exactly the right formula hasn't been executed yet. So I look at Houston right now, he might be in a little bit more than ringmaster mode, but he's not where he needs to be yet. But I think he'll get there.
Hell, man. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I'm going to do I have this, the world's loneliest website, jrsbarbecue.com, I have all my information for I feel like Jerry Lewis here in a goddamn telethon, you know. I got all these projects I got going like I'm broke. I got a ringside show coming to DC Improv in our nation's capital on August the 10th. I've got another one on the Friday night of August the 18th, the kickoff SummerSlam weekend. That's going to be at the Gotham Comedy Club. All the ticket information is at my lonely website. And I've been advertising. I've been using my advertising that I have a surprise guest for my New York show, that I haven't had a bigger surprise guest on my show since you walked on in New Orleans at WrestleMania 30.
Yeah,
right? 30. Yeah, so
Over at the Silver Dome.
Yeah. Yeah, Silver Dome. Oh, yeah, that was good.
Well, I looked over at Rock. I did. I said, hey, man, I'm going to go back it up. I'll let you hit the home run. He goes, all right. We were on the same page.
Yeah, exactly.
He heard the same idea. It was great going out there with Hogan and him. It was man, that was a couple of years
ago. That's a good
– You're damn right.
Good visual, good – all that's good. So I got those shows coming up. I enjoy them. I let the fans know there's no – they don't turn questions in. They just sit and ask them. I have an MC that will work the mic. And they can ask whatever they want. And I get some dandies, man. It was funny. I got into an argument with a guy in Scotland. And, you know, I don't think he could understand a damn word I was saying with my accent. And I sure as hell couldn't understand what he was saying. But we got into a little spat over why Chris – I said – he said, don't you think – here's the answer. They want you to answer. They already told you what they want you to answer. Don't you think – that Chris Benoit should be in the WWE Hall of Fame? No, I don't think that at all. And I think if he were here, he would say, don't put me in the Hall of Fame because I'll be a distraction. Because the whole Hall of Fame will be about me killing my wife and son and then committing suicide. Is that what you want for your Hall of Fame? It's not what I want for mine. That's what I think Chris Benoit would say if we could reach him right now, wherever he is.
Right.
My book's coming out in October. It's been the number one pre-order book on Amazon for the last few weeks. Comes out in October, and I appreciate you contributing to it very, very much. It's been a fun thing. But right now, I'm looking forward to doing more. I'm doing this women's tournament for WWE. I haven't done hardly any research on the – I'm getting all the material. And I'll be ready on game day. I know that Tully Blanchard's daughter, Tessa's in it. And past that, I don't really have a good feel for who all's in it, but I'll know. Showtime. But little projects like that excite me. You say, well, J.R., God, it's not WrestleMania. Well, no, I did WrestleMania this year. Remember?
Right.
Last match. Well, my last matches at WrestleMania days are really numbered, I'm assuming. And I don't have a problem with that. I had plenty of them. But now I'm doing something new. Nigel McGuinness is a real good new partner. He has a long future in the business. No different than you working with guys and helping stamp their work. In my role, I want to be able to do the same thing. I want him to say, I learned a lot from JR. I want Josh Barnett to say, I learned a little bit from JR. He can tell me out.
Yeah.
And that's good. It's the right thing to do. All of us should do that in our chosen fields of occupation, be a mentor or a leader. So I enjoy these new projects because now I'm going to go do a pure wrestling match. There's no pay-per-view to build to. There's no, you know, Twitter you know, who's trending and all this other stuff, which I get you got to do, but I ain't got to do it on this because it doesn't apply here. We're going to do a tape show, so it's about calling a match, and I love just calling a match, and the challenge of getting the unknown over. So I'm looking forward to those new projects and new partners and things of that nature. So it creates a new adventure for me.
Hey, on Twitter, you are?
At JRSBBQ.
Hey, don't forget the website, the loneliest website in the world, JR.
In the whole goddamn world, JR.
Right there with BrokenSkullRanch.com.
Yes. Yeah. We'll link it up.
Good talking to you.
You bet, buddy.
All right, everybody. Give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I go, I want to say thank you to Jim Ross for coming by my house. Awful good to see him live and in living color in person. One of my longtime close personal friends from the business of pro wrestling. Still friends to this day. And it's fun catching up with you and good to see you again. Hey, man, I tell you what, my next guest on the Thursday podcast is my old stunt double from Vancouver, B.C., Paul Lazenby. He wrote the book When We Were Bouncers, and now When We Were Bouncers 2 is out. He's compiling some more stories from maybe When We Were Bouncers 3. I did the forward for When We Were Bouncers 2. You can check that out. It's a very entertaining read. It's a great book. And Paul will be my next guest on the next Thursday podcast. And while we were sitting there talking, after New Japan had just come through town, like I said, everybody that's been on the podcast came through town because of New Japan, he recommended a match to me that I had never seen before. And the match that I'm recommending that you watch is a hellacious tag team match. It's from All Japan Pro Wrestling. Just go to YouTube and type in Kobashi and Kikuchi versus Furness and Crawford, May 25, 1992. Kobashi and Kikuchi versus Furness and Crawford, May 25, 1992. Boy, I tell you what, you talk about a hell of a goddamn match, and they catch this thing from the entrances of both teams to the final part of the match. I mean, I won't give the finish away if you've never seen this match. You talk about real high-level work. All these guys really laying their shit in. Watch the tags. Just watch the way they work the tags when they're coming in and out. Just small nuances and just the storytelling this match. Hell, I went down to the comments. I didn't know that Dave Meltzer had made this his match of the year for 1992. All I was doing was watching the match and thinking, God damn, that's a hell of a match. Well, Dave Meltzer, Pro Wrestling Observer, called this a five-star match, and I agree. Furness and Crockett were a hell of a goddamn tag team. They came to the WWF when I was there, and I didn't cross paths with them too much, but I was a huge fan of Doug Furness because of his powerlifting background, and I knew that he had been a running back at Tennessee and didn't know a whole lot about Crockett, but they were just a great, great tag team, and people were always wondering why they didn't make it bigger in WWF at the time. And man, they had all the talent in the world when they got there. Maybe they were a little beat up. I don't know. But I just know that they were over like a sumbitch over in Japan. And this is a hell of a match. And Kikuchi was really over at the time, but Kobashi was really over strong. So great reception for both tag teams. Watch this match. Watch the psychology. Watch the offense. Watch how they keep almost all the looks, all the action in the ring. Hardly ever work in the crowd. LaFon will refer to him just a few times here and there, but and Kobashi will every now and then. But they work. They keep their attention within the confines of that 20 by 20 squared circle, and that's what I really like to see. You can work the crowd, but you're doing work in the ring first and foremost. Sometimes in today's landscape, that is lost, and they're trying to work the crowd without doing the proper work inside the ring and not hooking the crowd and then being able to work them. So watch the attention of all these guys. They keep it in the ring, and that's what I like. The crowd is in hook, line, and sinker, a rabid fan base here, hot building, hot match, titles on the line. I recommend that you watch this match, and if you do, tell them Steve Austin sent you and send me an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com. Paul Lazenby, email me this match. I recommend it to you. Thanks for the recommendation, Paul. He will be on my next Thursday podcast. My former stunt doubles. We talk about when we were bouncers too, some of the old bullshit shenanigans that we had to go through working on those low-budget movies back in the day, and just a lot of fun. Looking forward to hearing my conversation with Paul Lazenby. Hey, man, we're striking up Broken Skull Challenge. I've been training my ass off, getting ready for this. It's going to be hotter than shit out there in the desert on that mountain. We're ready to go. 2 weeks away from filming. All the T-shirts I had from last season, all the seasons prior, are at ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin. We're going to add some new ones to the pile. And as far as beer goes, if you like a damn good IPA, I got one for you. Steve Austin, Broken Skull IPA. You can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. If you aren't in Cali, check out InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And if you're looking to get either the cold steel Broken Skull knife or the new working man's knife, you can get them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. If you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, my call sign is Steve Austin, BSR. I got to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Folks, keep listening. I've got Wade Keller coming up at the end of the show. And then be sure to stick around for the AP News headlines right after Wade. Until then, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Thanks for listening to Steve Austin Unleashed. Catch new episodes every Thursday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
All right, I got Wade Keller, Pro Wrestling Torch. He is also coming to Podcast One. Wade, how are you? When are you coming to Podcast One?
Any day now, actually on the 18th. So next Tuesday, just past midnight, we'll have our first debut show of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. And that show will be dedicated to Monday Night Raw, which is a big episode, which we'll be talking about in a moment. And Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net will be my first co-host on that show. And we'll be taking your emails. And we have a couple people lined up who will be in the building in Nashville for that episode of Raw, and we'll be bringing them onto the show also. So an hour to an hour and a half dedicated to top shelf Raw analysis and some in-person perspectives. And then we'll be there 4 days a week after that, covering SmackDown, covering the bigger wrestling picture on our third show of the week. And then we have a really cool interview that I want to wait till it's recorded, but we'll probably be announcing it on my first show for the debut interview that'll drop a week from tomorrow, Friday. And we'll be there. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, 4 days a week, every week, starting next week.
Outstanding. That's good to hear. Hey, let's jump into a little conversation about some professional wrestling / sports entertainment. And we've got 3 days of wrestling to talk about, but we're going to keep it very short and very concise. Anything that jumped out to you at the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view?
I thought it was a really good show, but the 30-minute cage match I thought was well done. A little slow for the first 10 minutes, but I didn't really have a problem with that. I thought that was good. I thought Cass put in a good showing. I thought it was the right thing to do in terms of the dynamic with Cass and Enzo. But that show's going to be remembered. It won't be forgotten, and it'll be remembered for the main event, Joe and Lesnar, and not only the Strowman-Reigns match, but the angle afterwards with the ambulance. So to me, those are probably the top four talking points from that show. There's some other good stuff filling it in. Did you see the show, Steve, or highlights?
Yeah, I saw it. But you said 30-minute cage match. Were you talking about the Iron Man match?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Iron Man match.
Okay, I was going to say, man, we're watching a different pay-per-view.
Yes, I didn't even know I said that. It just came out. So, yeah, the 30-minute Iron Man match.
No, I really enjoyed that match. It started off, I was like, eh, man, it's going to be tough. Because all of a sudden, shoot, what did it end up being? 4 falls to 3? And there was the 8th fall right there as time ran out. I tell you what, the guys worked their asses off. Real told a good story. I thought it was probably the best match on the card. And it's funny when you do these Iron Man matches, and sometimes you go 20 to 30 minutes, and you only get one fall out of it. All of a sudden, you've got an Iron Man match, and you have 7 falls within a 30-minute period. It's kind of like, well, dang, you know, because most of the time they're kicking out of everything that they're now using as a finish. So that's the only thing kind of jumped out at me, the 4 to 3 in 30 minutes. But it was a damn good match, and all four guys worked their asses off. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I did too. You know, I mean, the concept of the match is a challenge because you want to add some drama without it feeling like artificial drama. And giving the heels a 1-0 lead conceptually is good, but it has to be executed well so it doesn't feel like that would have never happened except for the fact that they have to tell a story for 30 minutes. But I thought they got away with it. You know, that it was an orchestra. It's like a trick play at the beginning of a football game. You can't do it all the time. Generally, you're going to, you know, just do the normal thing. But every once in a while, you can do a flea flicker or a Statue of Liberty or, snap it to the running back and not the quarterback. You know, whatever. And to me, that was a trick play. It was unexpected, and it worked. And so I was fine with it. I like that better than just going 2 minutes in and there's a fall.
Right.
I like a quick trick. So I thought it was a high IQ match. I thought that it was smart execution of that concept. And at least it wasn't like, 7 to 6. You know, like, I mean, 4 to 3, it's a lot of falls. But I also am of the belief when you tell that story that the idea that there would be more falls after the first one makes some sense in the sense that once you're beat up enough to get pinned once, it sort of makes sense you'd be vulnerable to getting pinned again. Overall, I mean, it was actually a really good match.
What else jumped out at you on this pay-per-view?
Yeah, what do you think of Cass and Enzo? Because I've come away from this breakup, their promos and Cass's performances in the ring, wrestling and solo on the mic, also on TV this week. I've been really impressed by both guys, but I thought that was the right thing to do with Cass, to have him go over and go over strong.
Well, he went over, and he did go over strong. You know, I thought Enzo went out there and cut a great promo before the match. But, you know, man, and cutting that great promo, I was like, man, he's in for an ass-whooping. Sure enough, you know, yes. I would have loved to have seen him get just a little bit of something in, whether, you know, whether it's being underhanded or some type of shortcut, even just some type of heel move, just to get on top of Big Cass for a little bit, to give Big Cass a little bit of an ass-whooping. You know, it doesn't have to be a 5-minute ass whooping, but just to get some stuff in on him. But it was what it was. Enzo sold his ass off. It was a great promo by Enzo. And then the follow-up, you know, with Cass, you know, the next night when was at Raw, I mean, he went out there and cut a damn good promo. So I like where these guys are going. You know, Cass still has a long ways to go. It's going to be interesting to see where they go with Enzo. But I got to give a shout-out to him. And both guys actually did a good job on the horn. Enzo prior to the match, Cass post-match, or next day.
I was texting with a main event big man wrestler, and I didn't ask if I could quote him, so I won't, in terms of who it is. But he was. I was asking about what his thoughts were on Cass and his work, and he said that he's still not quite telling the right story because he wants to show the world that he's agile. And he's so close to a JBL Kevin Nash crossover, but he needs to work stronger earlier after 10 to 12 start to get out of his comfort zone. Use the ropes to catch him instead of taking bumps early on. I thought that was interesting, but he was high on him in general. But he said there's still some work to do in terms of wrestling big man style. I think he carries himself like a big man. I think he's authoritative on the microphone. Watching him a year and a half ago in NXT, I didn't think he had this in him. I believe when I watch someone, I need to look in their eyes and believe that they believe. That's one of the great things about Joe, which we'll talk about, I'm sure.
Yep.
The cast has something there, but big man style, I think that, you know, we saw it with maybe Matt Morgan, especially in TNA. Hey, everybody, look what I can do. I can wrestle like the cruiserweights. And I think if you can do it, it doesn't necessarily mean you should. And I think Matt was more effective when he was restricting himself to big man moves and having the smaller guys kind of bump into him and fall off of him. So I thought that was interesting insight from former main event tall wrestler.
Maybe just a little more intensity, you know, on the lockups, just in general, not speeding anything up, just with the in-ring intensity. And yeah. You can go back and watch classic Jerry Lawler matches to learn about intensity. And Jerry could start in the peak of a feud and not be redlining at 7,000 RPM. He just had that intensity. He was just dialed in. So I think that's one of the things that Big Cash can work on. But you know, he's a way good enough athlete. That a guy this size, I still think this guy has a lot of upside, has a lot of potential. We'll see if he realizes that potential. And I kind of draw not a correlation, and we're going to be all over the place, and that's okay because it's my podcast. If you look, I just got finished DVR and SmackDown. I wasn't able to watch a show last week. I watched both shows and a pay-per-view this week. I really enjoyed the match with Jinder Mahal versus, God dang, what was that guy's name?
Ty Dillinger.
Yes. I'm sorry about botching that guy's name, but this was a good match as far as Jinder Mahal goes, just because that was a match for him with respect to his opponent. That was a match for Jinder to get over, and he worked like a champion, had a mean streak, didn't go crazy with all the facials. He's a very expressive person, but I liked his aggressive nature. He controlled the action from the get-go. A little bit wonky on feeding, you know, the short comeback, but he was working as a guy that was a get over match. So, you know, for Big Cass to kind of take a page out of that book, you know, to maintain control, work on top more rather than 50-50. So I like what they did with Jinder in that match, how he positioned himself, how he worked. And I think the same needs to be said for this is a template for what Big Cass should do. Not work like Jinder, but work with that percentage of what Jinder's working.
Yeah, I do too. I am going up, not down on my impression of Jinder Mahal. You know, like I think everybody was a little startled by him going from being a lackey to Rusev. And, you know, yeah, our eyebrows were raised. Why was he the finalist at the Andre the Giant Battle Royal? Why did he beat Jack Swagger? Although I think that happened before this idea for this push came in. But and there were some shaky starts, and his promos still have some ways to go. But overall, I think you hit on a lot of reasons that to be more optimistic about Jinder establishing himself as a main eventer. And the thing that I do not take lightly when it comes to gender's push is WWE behind the scenes get to know the people that get pushes, and they also get to know people who sometimes don't get pushes. And they're going to put the best version that they can on television of people. That's their goal. But that doesn't mean that they're not behind the scenes going, this guy won't be able to handle the push, or this person's not professional, or this person will get a big head, or this person isn't going to work hard to get better. They're going to get complacent. Everything you heard about gender is he's a professional, he's working hard, he says the right things, and he's not going to get a big head, and he's going to keep getting better. And I think we're starting to see that. So this is something that might work out, even if it was a little sudden and there was some pushback. And I'm not sure that I want him to be world champion 2 years from now. I still am waiting for him to have that breakout match that I look forward to seeing, where I want to pay to see it as the conclusion to a pay-per-view. But you're picking some of that stuff out, Steve, really well, that sometimes I'm kind of noticing but not able to articulate. And I do think he's getting better. And I think Ty Dillinger is in a good spot too, as a likable guy who goes out there and tries to put up a fight but ultimately loses. And there's no shame in being in that role. It's valuable to have people like that on the roster too.
No, he did so in great fashion. And so, yeah, even though he did the favors, all of a sudden I've been hearing the name Ty Dillinger. I'd seen him sporadically, but now just in that performance, trying to fight back, selling like $1 million, so yeah, he takes the loss, but I noticed the guy now, sorry, I botched his name, but yeah, that's part of paying your dues and working your way up the roster. So there's no shame in doing a JOB, as we all know that. But anyway, I jumped off. Let's go back to the pay-per-view. That was just a correlation in talking about Big Cass and bringing up Jinder Mahal, because I kind of feel like, Jinder's the champ, but this is what Big Cass needs to do. Major angle shot in the pay-per-view, Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman in an ambulance match. Take it away, Wade.
Well, yeah, I mean, the match was the match. I mean, it was two big, powerful, and above-average athletic big man wrestlers having a good match. I thought that it was paced well. Even taking a shot to the arm with a chair, like there was some brutality, but then Strowman no sells it, and then Reigns swings it again, and Strowman no sells it and yells, son of a bitch at Reigns. I mean, there were little moments in that match that I think people remember or would have remembered if not for what happened afterwards, because that obviously was the dominant aspect here. They brawl all the way up to the stage, and Reigns throws Braun into the lighting grid. When Reigns charged with a spear, Braun steps to the side and then throws Reigns into the back of the ambulance and slammed the door shut to win. I thought it was a clever finish in the sense that Braun gets a win, bragging rights to a win. He won within the rules. But Reigns, fans watching who are going, did Braun really get the better of Reigns? Not really. It was more happenstance. It was unlucky. Reigns just happened to be going for the spear in a way that would shoot him into the back of the ambulance. So, we're kind of wondering, how do they protect both guys with a finish? Well, I think that did it. And then in the end, and Roman said this on Raw on Monday, Roman did what he said he was going to do. He did put Braun in the back of the ambulance, and he did, which announcer was it who said it, that he brought him this close to, I think it was Booker T. Yeah, it was Booker T. That he did what he said. He said he was going to take him to hell, and he took him that close. So everybody kind of got their bragging rights, but the ambulance angle has been controversial, because Roman, after the match, threw Braun in the back of the ambulance, got in the driver's seat. Poor driver threw him out of there. that was a little funny. Guy's just doing his job, Steve. And backs up full speed into the back of a semi-trailer. I'm still waiting for my WWE.com update on that driver. But that was hardcore. That was heavy duty. Reigns takes a lot of criticism for that. Why is he not under arrest? That was going too far, partially because people have an affection for Braun, partially because some people don't like Roman, obviously. But there is something to that. When you go to that level in a pro wrestling context, it does jar some people out of the narrative structure of that was attempted homicide. That was somebody could have been killed. And Roman explained it away by saying, attitude era. Why did they all get to do it and I didn't get it? What'd you think, Steve?
I loved it. I mean, I bought it hook, line, and sinker. You know, it was a great win for Braun Strowman. I thought both guys looked great in the match. You know, these are tough matches to have, trying to put another man in the back of that ambulance. You know, and Roman started teeing off on Braun at that particular time, went for the spear. Hell, Braun Strowman just did ole, the old sidestep, and Roman goes into the ambulance, shuts the door, so we have a winner. And then the angle ensues. I thought it was a big-time angle that they spent a lot of time and effort on. Maybe went a frog's hair long, but god dang, I just like stuff that's, I mean, that's right up my alley. So, you know, attempted homicide. Man, this is pro wrestling. Finally, you know, after they want to call it sports entertainment all these years, and then all of a sudden they cut a major angle like this, and then there's, oh, well, what, homicide this, or whatever. Hey, man, it's pro wrestling. This you bought in. You want to nitpick the product, you want to nitpick the writing. They shoot a damn killer angle, in my opinion, and I didn't know if there was any blowback or whatever, so that's what I'm responding to. I thought it was a great angle. Props to both guys. I thought they executed to the best of their ability. Braun, you know, finally, you know, getting out of that thing with the jaws of life and then walking off. Just, you know, in the no-sell of the chair. There were just some strong moments in there that you know, just like, goddamn, man, that was some good shit. So props to both guys and props to WWE for pulling the trigger on a major angle. That's the biggest angle that I've seen in a long-ass time.
Did it seem to you that Braun was being protected, not as a heel, not necessarily, I don't know, did it seem like they were framing him as a babyface? Because when you make that big of a deal out of what Roman did to Braun, and it's fine for two people to have a personal grudge and for fans to maybe like both of them or not be sure how they feel about both of them, but still have these two guys going at it, not necessarily earning each other's respect yet, because they're still in the I'm going to kill you phase, but in the end, you could sort of, the fans gain respect for both guys for bringing it. But for Braun to drag himself out of the ambulance, refuse medical help, be bloodied, get up and walk away on his own, that's 100% babyface. That's not what Vince McMahon gives to heels. What do you read anything into that in terms of where they're going with Braun or how they're framing him?
I don't know where they're going with him. I don't know how they're framing him. The way I would just, you know, he's been getting, you know, pops, you know, when he does that thing, when he raises up both arms, so everybody's popping for him. They're basically taking to him as a baby face. So I just think, as I think Vince's belief these days is, you don't really have quote unquote heels or baby faces. They're just, the guys are just being whatever they're being. So I think that's Vince's philosophy. I think positioned as a baby, and obviously, well, I think it could be, you could put anybody in the ring with him, and I think Braun's just going to be Braun. More on the babyface side, but I don't think they're trying to say, hey, man, look what this guy just survived. Look what the guy put him through. You got to cheer for him because he's this tough. I just think it goes along with what they bill him as the monster among men, and that's, I guess, what a monster would do. He can weather more pain than a normal human being. He's bigger and badder than most human beings on planet Earth. So I think that's how they're positioning him, just as a monster in that WWE universe. And I liked it. And so when I see Braun do the things that he does, you know, I like him. I'm invested in his character. I got a chance to do a podcast with him, so I like him on a personal level as well. But just watching what he's doing, the kid's doing a phenomenal job. And so you can't hear, you can't help but like somebody who's going out there this young in the business. And, you know, every time he gets at bat, you know, in a major angle or in a major match, he carries his in. So props to the guy. I just think he's being positioned as a monster among men, and you cheer for him if you want to. And if you wanted to, you could boo for him. But he's really not doing anything to be booed, in my opinion, but wanting better competition. And that's babyface, you know, almost. Because a heel could do that as well. A heel could do that as well. But I'm taking him as a babyface. And, you know, as the next night, we'll go back to the main event here in a second. But as we went over to Raw with that segment with Roman there at the end, with that Roman, who was it, Joe and Brock, you know, how do you think they're positioning Roman?
I think they're positioning Roman as not a good guy, not a bad guy, but the guy. I don't think they're saying it anymore, which is, I mean, maybe he'll say it again, but he's not driving it home all the time. But that's, Reigns is the guy. And I think you're right. I think at the top of the card, Vince McMahon just wants guys who are over, who, when they come out, it feels like it's a big deal. You know, we saw that yesterday with last night with at Staples Center, 20,000 people, Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather. Make people – make them into a big deal. Don't worry about framing them as a good guy or a bad guy. Have them seem like a big star. And I think that's worth doing for Reigns. I think they're starting to do it with Braun. They've been doing it for a long time with Lesnar. They're going to start doing it, I think, more with Cena as less of a full-time guy as that – cements itself that he comes around sometimes and then goes away sometimes, and I think there's room for that. I don't think you can do a whole roster like that. I think you need to have a guy like Cass cutting a nasty heel promo where you don't like him in the end. You need Jinder Mahal being nasty, and you need the announcers framing what they do as nasty, and you need 100% good guys like AJ Styles, and you need the obnoxious heels like Miz. You still need heel faces filling out 85%, 90% of the card, but sometimes I think we are learning through example and execution that you can have somebody like Reigns and make money and have them positioned in that way. That said, I will still say, philosophically for me, I think it would be better if everybody were aligned as heel and face, where fans either really love someone or really dislike somebody, and that's how they were framed in the storyline. But it's not a big drop-off when you have guys like Braun and Lesnar and Reigns, and to a degree Joe now, where fans just see them as big fucking deals, and they want to see every one of their matches. And if you have that, you're going to make some money.
I still believe in heels and babies, and so that's my belief in pro wrestling. But to your point, yeah, I think that's what Vince is doing. And with the four guys you're mentioning, when they come out, there is a reaction, and they are, you know, superstars. So they are getting over. All of them are. Some of them have been over, but we're talking, I think, specifically about Roman and Braun. Yeah, I like defined heel baby roles, but nonetheless, when those guys come out to do whatever they're going to do, there is a definite crowd reaction, and there's some electricity in the air. It was really interesting to watch John Cena make his comeback because, you know, like people say, oh, man, turn him heel. We love him. We hate him. Hey, man, there is electricity in the air, and that guy's over. And that the same is happening with these four guys that we're the other two guys that we're talking about.
Absolutely. Wait, I want to ask you about Braun, though. You talked about him a little bit, but we've seen guys going back to Jeep Swenson in World Class. We've compared Braun to him before. I don't know, Ted Arcidi. You know, just like the big muscular guys where Vince McMahon would look and go, yeah, this I can make money. And they don't always work out. And I know you did a podcast with them and you liked him and all that. But on air, what is it that is making what Braun does work? Because, again, I say a year and a half ago we wouldn't have predicted this, but we wouldn't have. I mean, he was kind of the third or fourth guy in the Wyatt family. People thought Bray and Luke were one and two, and Braun and Eric Rowan were kind of, you know, fighting it out for number three. And he's turned into somebody that I think is going to have a Kane-like career. He's going to be an iconic figure for a whole generation in a lot of big matches. Not that like Kane, not the centerpiece, top guy who headlines WrestleManias year after year and pay-per-views, but that next special attraction guy. A little under the Giant, a little Undertaker, a little Kane. The fact that I'm saying that right now is still surprising to me, but I think he's earned it.
I think he has higher potential than you're giving him, because I think the guy could be a main event player. When I saw him start coming along, like you said, as part of the Wyatt family, he was just that big guy. But you noticed him because he was so goddamn big. I mean, you hear these sound bites from him, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to talk to the guy. Did some research on him, the strongman background. All of a sudden, I get in a room with him right before Monday Night Raw. It's one of the smallest rooms I've ever been, you know, done a podcast in, and the guy's just he's charismatic, fun to talk to, and has an easy way about having a conversation with. So I just kind of felt some charisma about the guy. And I think people just, as big as he is, no one else is like that. I think you respect that. But I also think they're just, I think the guy is real. There's a likability factor to him. Why? When people do strong, impressive things, and that's what they've had him do with the ambulance. And you think, hey, man, that guy's that big. He could probably actually turn over that ambulance. So I think people are buying into him because, you know, he's pretty goddamn authentic. He's comes from the strongman world, and that's what he's been doing out here. And he's really absorbed and picked up the business at a high level. And so does he have a long ways to go? Sure he does. I mean, as long as you're in the business, you have a ways to go. Hell, AJ Styles is still figuring out different ways to go, and he's one of the best, if not the best worker in the world. So Braun Strowman, for as young as he is, as short a time as he's been doing this, he's really, really kicking ass. And so I think people just like the son of a bitch.
And also, I don't think he'd be where he is with the fans accepting him if – well, two things. WWE hadn't put him in really cool – situations that harken back to the Attitude Era with, you know, the beer truck and the milk truck and the outside the ring and the parking garage and the outside the arena type stuff that WWE doesn't do all the time. But when you do it, it makes the wrestlers involved feel special. So the ambulance angles, I think, have catapulted him. But he, in this era, you have to deliver in the ring. That's what's, you know, going to be waiting for Jinder Mahal. If he really is accepted by fans as a main eventer, all fans, he's going to have some really good WWE-style main event matches that are more than just, you know, that kind of 2¾ to 3¼ star, but hit that 3.5 to 4 star range that says, all right, I'm happy ending a pay-per-view on that note. Braun has done that, and I think that's part of it, and I think it's nice to have a guy with his style in the mix. The big man era, it felt like it was over for a little bit or in jeopardy with all the small athletic guys.
Well, and yes, to your point, had they just said, hey man, this guy's he's 6'9 and he's 385, whatever he is, hey man, let's push him to the moon and do a bunch of cool shit with him. They stuck him in an accessory role with the Wyatt family, so he was never the chosen one. All of a sudden, the kid kind of starts shining. He's there when he needs to be there. He's doing his thing. He wasn't being force-fed down your throat. All of a sudden, they say, hey, man, this guy's got some potential. They give him a little bit, and he does well. They keep giving him a little bit more. He keeps doing well. So he hasn't been shoved down anybody's throat. And I think that's also a big reason of why people are taking to him. But anyway, let's not make this the Braun Strowman show. Let's go on and talk about the main event, Brock Lesnar versus Samoa Joe for the Universal Championship. Man, do you have a time there how long this match was? Wait, it's got to be maybe 8-10 minutes.
Well, if you count the brawl before the bell, you're at about 9. It's a little under 7 minutes bell to bell.
God dang, man. I really don't know where they're going, so I'm invested. I just, with the nature of these two guys, with Joe's workmanship, the intensity he really showed in that promo on Monday Night Raw following that pay-per-view, I really wanted to see more time between these two guys because I'm such a fan of both guys.
Yeah, I was okay with going short, especially with a pre-match brawl, you know, pushing maybe 10 minutes of action between them. But I mean, I'm left wanting more. Now, I don't know if being left wanting more is a bad thing. Always, you know, like sometimes you want to be left wanting more. This felt like the first chapter of what could be something epic that goes on for a while if Lesnar has enough matches left in him in WWE. I think the expectation with what Joe did is the next time Joe might get Brock because he came so close. And Brock, you know, the beatdown of Randy Orton, what he did to John Cena, there's just times where it looks like Brock's playing with his opponents. And even though it was short, I think Joe came away being able to hold his head high going, he didn't get blown out by 23 points. You know, like this was a field goal at the end, you know, with the clock running out. Not the clock running out literally because it wasn't an Iron Man match. But it felt like Brock got a win that could have turned into a loss even though it was a short match. And Joe, I thought, I mean, whatever, if anybody thought he lost anything, especially by not at least kicking out once, you know, which is maybe one of the critiques is, you know, give us a couple kickouts and build to that finish a little more. And I would have voted for that. But Joe carries himself so well, I'm not particularly worried for Joe. I thought, in fact, I'm not worried at all for Joe. I thought he was phenomenal Monday night.
Well, yeah, he was. To me, he was the spark in the ring that night. And I also like Brock's attitude as well. Hey, man, let's get it on, pretty much. Kind of loose out there. But going back to the match, man, just... Again, I'm a fan of both guys, and I'm a fan of guys getting beat by guys' finishes. One F5, and he was done, and he had been taking it to Brock, had him in a cocaine clutch, Brock in a weakened state, but an F5 is an F5, and I just, with the way everybody has kicked out of everybody's finishes, you know, I'm glad he stayed down, but it would have been nice to have seen something a little bit to soften Joe up more than that, but I mean, that's being real nitpicky. I'm interested to see where they go from here. And I guess that I just wanted to see more time because I was so interested in the match. I still am. But Joe is one of my favorite workers and has been for some time. And I knew that, you know, the way Brock works and those two in the ring, you know, the two big bastards like that, you know, they could go if they could go 30 minutes. And I just think it'd be awesome to see the guys put in, two guys of that size. I mean, especially with the way Brock's been decimating people in the past, for Joe and him to just have a classic, you know, anywhere between 20, 25, 30 minutes. I just think it'd be a great story. So I'm in. I'm in on the story. We'll see where they go from here. Let's jump into Raw real quick and go to that promo segment there. What was that, the end of Raw, whenever it was? What was your takeaway from that? We heading to a three-way at a pay-per-view or what?
Oh, yeah, the main event segment with – or the top segment of the show with Lesnar, Heyman, Joe – and Reigns. We're either headed to, it seems like we're headed to a three-way or even a four-way with Braun, and I think that's the mystery going into to this Monday night. I think this is going to be a good rated show, because you got the Kurt Angle cliffhanger personal mystery, and then you have Joe against Reigns. And I think after Joe in that segment was so good that it was, I mean, he didn't lose a step because he lost. There's few people who I think can walk in the ring and stand with Heyman and Lesnar and absolutely look like they are 100% comfortable being in the ring with them. And he is. I mean, you know, yes, Lesnar got to swear and got to swear a couple times and got bleeped, but I think the line of the night was when Lesnar wasn't looking at Joe and Joe said, "You look at me when I'm talking to you."
Yep.
That was to get away with saying that in the ring with Brock and not have Brock just tackle you instantly is a sign of respect for him. And I loved Brock blinking nervously and taking a step backwards when Joe's music played and he walked onto the stage. That made up for Joe doing the job, because Lesnar doesn't show fear. And it was subtle. The announcers drew attention to him taking a step back. But Lesnar's body language was so just spectacular there. It showed Lesnar might have won, but he fears Joe.
Okay, and then Roman in this mix. How'd you feel about that?
I thought Roman was really good, too. I thought he had, you know, good little lines that he snuck in there. Although Joe had the best line when he said, "Hey, you're real mouthy for a man who got beat down by Braun Strowman last night."
Roman said, "Hey, look, yeah, I might got beat down, but look, try to find the guy that beat me down," or whatever it was. So he had a little bit of a comeback here, but
everybody did. Like, they all had good lines. I mean, when is Heyman ever showing up on the mic? I mean, if Heyman's in a segment, he's the dominant guy. And here it was the Reigns Joe Lesnar show. I love the segment. It's one of my favorite segments. I'm not even sure where it's going to lead. I don't know if there's going to be maybe Strowman interferes and costs Reigns the match, and that's going to give Joe the win, and we could just get a rematch, and maybe they go 25, 30 minutes. I think everybody would be happy with that. Or you have a double countout or a no contest, and Kurt Angle, all frazzled, goes, "Well, what do I do?" Okay, three-way. Or Braun comes out and says, "I won the ambulance match," and Kurt goes, "Good point, you're in it too." And we got a four-way. I think all those are possibilities.
Okay, well, let's leave it right there. We had a few things that we took away from Raw, a few things we took away from SmackDown, but we focused on the pay-per-view. Yep. We're at the 32-minute mark. I got to cut my producer a little bit of slack, so we're going to give it the go-home cue here, Wade. Tell us about your show, what you still have going on your own, so people can find everything that you're doing.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve. The main thing is, wherever you're listening to this on a podcast app on your phone or computer, just enter Wade Keller. And the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast logo, it's blue background, there's a picture of me. Click subscribe on that, and you'll be good to go next week when we go with our four-show-a-week format right here at Podcast One. I think you're going to love what we do. If you like my conversations with Steve, check out what I do with my array of co-hosts and my interviews. It's going to be real timely, real fast turnaround. Within a few hours of Raw going off the air, you can download the Raw show. Within a few hours of SmackDown going off the air, the SmackDown show, plus a weekly interview, four shows a week. And we're going to take emails. We're going to be calling people on site at Raw and SmackDown. Very excited about the show. That's the main thing. If you're willing to, go give us a 5-star rating and a positive review on iTunes to help keep us high up in the rankings so we can get more listeners right out of the gate. Follow my TV reports live Monday, Tuesday nights on pwtorch.com. I update it every day with a bunch of writers and perspectives and news and all that, pwtorch.com. And follow our Mayweather-McGregor coverage at mmatorch.com. And finally, follow me on Twitter, at the Wade Keller.
Wade, I'm going to jump in, and then I'll go check out your shows. And if necessary, I will break the bank and give you a 6-star rating.
Thank you.
And no, that's not a shot at Dave Meltzer. That's props to Dave Meltzer and referencing the Omega Okada match. Wade, good talking with you as always.
Thanks, Steve. Always a pleasure. Time flies.